Hey everybody, it is the Android Central Podcast. We are live from Barcelona, Spain for MWC 2018. My name is Daniel Bader, and I'm joined by lovely gentlemen. The person who just cracked that can of Estrella, Alex Dobie.
What's going on?
Andrew Martinick, you have a beer.
You look like an operator on the line awaiting your call currently.
Stand by. I'm putting you on hold. We have one more person. Mr. Mobile himself, Michael Fisher. How are you?
Oh, Mike from Boston calling in. Hey.
Oh, so welcome back to the show. Hey. It's so great to hear from you.
Always like calling in my favorite Pepinos. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And all the way
from Cincinnati, Ohio, joining us.
It's been too long,
my friend.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, yeah. Well, third time caller, yeah. More or less. Derek Kessler, how are you?
I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So we are in our apartment in just off La Ramblas. I'm sure I just butchered that, but that's okay.
Go with it. La Rambla, right?
Yeah.
Because
they hate us English speakers anyway. We butcher all the words.
Yep.
And it is the night before we leave, so everything's done. We're not going back to the Fiera. We're done with all of our coverage. So we're going to start from the beginning, and we're going to make our way to the Cat S61.
Oh, yay!
We're ending on a very high note.
Yeah.
We're ending on a poop emoji.
You'll stick around for that one.
I might have a surprise piece of content not in the rundown.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Okay. So we do want to start from the very beginning. Alex, we have... We knew a long time ago, a few months at least, that LG was not going to be releasing a successor to the G6 at MWC 2018. Instead, they gave us what?
They gave us the LG V30 S Plus ThinQ.
You're welcome.
Oh, sorry, the operator needs his beer open as well.
Ooh. Oh, jeez. Oh, my God, that peaked the hell out of me.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so you're not using the phone, but we have them nearby.
It's charging behind me. But yeah, it's...
I have one right here.
Okay,
it's
Derek.
It's actually nice. It's an upgraded V30 that, as was widely rumored, there is a dubious AI focus, as there is many of the phones here at MWC. So essentially all this is at a hardware level is a V30 with 6 gigs of RAM, with 128 or 256 gigs of storage, and some different software and some slightly different colors. There's very little of any real substance that's different here, as Andrew tries to put a beer on a table with that.
So you'll be hearing
Hey, I'm the professional one being quiet. You're the one getting distracted.
You literally just, like, sprayed beer in my face. Okay, so you'll be hearing various can openings, beer drinking throughout the episode. If you are sensitive to such material, please, you know... Stop listening now.
In the post below.
Dislike, unsubscribe.
Yeah.
don't do any of those.
Leave a comment on Mr. Mobile's various videos. He wants more of them.
Smash that dislike button.
Okay, so V30S ThinQ. Obviously not the phone that we necessarily wanted, but is it the phone that we deserve?
No, I don't think it's either of those things.
It's, so the presentation of this was so weird, right? Because... like I said, there's nothing really that new at a hardware level. There's nothing new that is required for these AI features. They will be ported, most of them, back to the regular V30 when LG at some point gets around to updating the V30. It's hard to make a case for this being a separate SKU. There's no reason for this to exist. And actually, mostly, it's just a case of the branding of ThinQ being slapped on a phone because that's their messaging around AI now. It's in all their smart appliances. That's a feature on the phone as well, so there's like an ecosystem play. Overall, I mean, a good phone, but, you know, given the delta from the normal V30, kind of an underwhelming announcement from them, particularly given how big a week this was for Samsung.
Yeah. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties.
I'm looking at a Google Docs spreadsheet and just
what
a,
have
giant,
you done?
A giant
you
white
just created
box
a chart is what
says
you did.
No data.
No, you created a chart.
How am I supposed to know?
Alex, okay. I agree. I don't see a lot of reason for this to be its own SKU, the V30S.
I would have been perfectly fine if they just said, here's our new software for the
V30. How could they not?
Problem with that is it requires LG to release a software update.
Oh! No!
Pepino one, Pepino nothing.
And so what if they just said, would this be any different than saying, okay, starting on this day, all new V30s are going to ship with this new version of software,
that would require LG to ship V30s.
Ooh, jeez.
Like, deep cuts. They would still say they're committing to trying to release software updates for original V30s.
This just in, Mr. Mobile just sat down in the fartiest chair.
I'm really sorry. This chair looks really nice, is very comfortable. It's not a great podcast.
He identified it as the farty chair, and then he chose to sit in it.
So, moving on. So, that's
the problem. They put this S on there. The S means nothing.
No.
The hardware is the exact same.
They know there are two new colors.
And two more gigabits of RAM.
Okay, there's a new color and a slightly different color.
But they've already released...
It doesn't even have a new name. It's crazy.
But they've already released... After the main V30 launch, they already took multiple opportunities to release different new colors and release same colors in different places. So they didn't need to rebrand or, change the brand to do that.
It seems pretty clear that, there was maybe another device planned. When that device got pushed back, they still wanted to have a hardware launch.
Yeah, this was my theory as well. It seems like they had maybe a phone that was also running an 835 they planned on releasing here that had all this AI stuff built in. And they're like, well, let's take that and stick it on the V30 instead.
Right.
So there is we know on the record a few things, and there's a few things we can take away or we can suppose based on the behavior of the company. The first is that LG replaced its mobile CEO with somebody who came in, and what seems to have happened is he stopped the G7, whatever that would have been called.
Said, hey, now I'm running this business that's not making any money, and it would probably be good if it made money.
And this is coming the same, would be announced at the same time as another fairly impressive phone.
They're fairly impressive, but arguably not very...
Yeah, and so...
Let Daniel complete his sentence there, sorry.
No, I think what's interesting to point out is LG has lost money in its mobile division for a while. The G5 didn't do well. The G6, despite being an excellent device, didn't make the company tons of money, didn't rebound the mobile division. The V30, even though LG called out the phone specifically in its most recent earnings call as selling really well, is still a relatively niche device, so it's not selling in the same numbers as the G6. You know, never mind the Galaxy S8, so, let's be realistic. Drastic things maybe had to happen. This product, Alex, sounded like it was a stopgap that may not have existed a few weeks before, or at least may not have existed in the same way a few weeks before maybe CES.
Yeah, there's nothing in this product that you couldn't very easily scramble together as a company and get together within, I don't know, a month or two. The software could well have been in development for whatever other phone was out there.
And you can tell that they don't have launch plans for this thing.
Well, they have launch plans in Korea and nowhere else.
Well, of course, they could launch a new phone every 2 weeks in Korea. That's not a problem. They don't have... It's like these things are not... They decided... It seems like they decided at some point a couple weeks ago to start printing, these new boxes that have an S ThinQ on them. And then they're just going to start rolling them out to whatever carriers might take them. Just like they found carriers and retailers to put the V30 Plus, not the S Plus, but the V30 Plus with extra storage.
Like yeah, Sprint. This is basically that. This comes by default with 128 gigs of storage, the V30S, and then the V30S Plus comes with 256 gigs of storage, and both variants have 6 gigs of RAM, so an extra 2 over the main V30. Those are the main hardware updates. There's a new color.
Two new colors. As Alex
said, there's already a Moroccan blue in parts of Europe. This is new Moroccan blue.
It is new Moroccan blue.
And I highly doubt that you'd be able to tell the difference unless you held two of them
for a long amount of time.
And what's the other one? Titanium gray?
Titanium gray.
New
titanium gray.
Platinum gray?
Titanium.
I think titanium.
No, it is platinum, because the other one was platinum silver.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And this one is new. Next year's gray.
Wait, is titanium gray the S9?
I guarantee you don't guess.
No.
I think it's
potato. So there's
such a trivial color change.
Yeah.
But there was so much emphasis on it.
Because that's all that changed.
That's all they have to talk about, right? I mean, if it were a change in batches or change in production runs at a factory that produced these color differences, I'm not saying that's what it was, but no one would take notice.
Right.
And so some guy really bored ran a blog about it.
Some guy at the manufacturing plant just put in the wrong color code.
Right.
And then they just ran with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, we don't want to lose our ass on these 1500 V30s we just made.
1500. That's either really optimistic or really rude. We'll see.
Sauvage.
So the question is, why, if this is, you know, an somewhat underwhelming announcement.
Yes.
And LG knows that.
Do you say if this is...
If we want to call this underwhelming.
We do.
Okay, I'm trying to be generous.
I'm not even close to being whelmed.
The question is, we know this, obviously LG knew this coming in. Why?
Mm-hmm. Because it makes them relevant very briefly. It keeps them in the... the timing of the embargo, 2 a.m., the same day as the Galaxy S9 launch. It's obviously just intended.
They knew if they did that, it was going to be steamrolled in 12 hours.
But at the very least, it keeps them in the conversation to the point where, you know, other people reporting on Samsung's thing will be like, even if it's just a footnote.
No, you're not making a funny point, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
If we move on from LG, I feel like I'll get recommitted to this conversation.
It's not in any way Alex's point. Seriously, it's just the content.
No, I'm sorry.
You're right. No, this is it's boring. And here's the thing. We're not, like, let's step away for a minute. We're not obligated to talk about products that we don't care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just agree that the V30S should, that's it. We're done. Okay. So
let's agree that the LG V30S
is a phone.
It happens, yeah.
So a little bit more interesting. I think a lot more interesting, actually. Nokia, HMD Global made a few announcements, and one significant change to its software strategy. That
nice.
That was efficient.
That I think will have implications, obviously, for the company, but it may actually force the hand of some other companies as well, which I hope will happen. So let's talk about the announcements, Michael. Why don't you walk us through a few of the phones that were announced and some of the changes to the company, and we can talk about them.
Yeah, I apologize in advance. I'm not going to get the numbers exactly right here because there were a lot of phones announced, and I pretty much only paid attention to two of them.
We'll be sure to correct you.
Great, I appreciate that.
In the comments.
Yeah.
Below.
In the, but no, I mean, we had, what I think it was about four separate devices announced at the show, spanning the low end to the ultra high. And so I didn't pay much attention to the, wait, is the Nokia 2?
One.
The Nokia 1 is brand
new.
Obviously the entry level one. The what's the one before the 7 plus? The 6
the new
been
6.
Redesigned, except I don't know if that's news or not because it was already redesigned once for the Chinese market.
Right, right? And announced in early January.
Okay, so the 7 plus, which we'll come back to, and the Nokia 8 Sirocco.
Yeah.
Desert Wind.
Okay, so this is not the first time Nokia has used the Sirocco name.
Indeed.
As very pedantic commenters will point out.
It was used on the, and YouTubers too, those jerks. It was used on the Nokia 8800 back in 2007, and it was the same piano black, very beautiful finish with a significant heft to it that I guess the regular 8800 did not necessarily have. And this basically does that to the Nokia 8.
Mm-hmm.
It looks nothing like the existing Nokia 8. It looks to me like a Galaxy S 6 Edge painted black and sexified.
And it doesn't even have the exact same internals either.
Indeed, yeah. It's
puzzling. It's just a different phone.
Why they still called it the 8. Like this could, they could have called this the Nokia 9 and
basically everything about it.
They could have called it the Nokia Sirocco and just gone super exclusive.
Because people are already doing that. They're just dropping the 8.
We've just been calling it the Rocco.
Indeed, we have.
Rocco's modern
cheeky
life.
Cheeky Pepinos we are.
But anyway, so I didn't mean to jump right into the specifics on the high-end one, I'm sorry, but that was one of the two I paid attention to, and to, before you guys ignore it, because this is the Android Central podcast,
they announced one device not running Android because it's not a smartphone, the banana phone.
Banana phone. I think that's worth talking about.
Yeah, I think so too.
If only because, so kind of an aside, but I think as important, we had a really cool conversation with a couple of the HMD Global designers who are longtime Nokia designers. They were there pre-Microsoft acquisition. They designed some of the, you know, classic phones that are now making a comeback. And part of it stems from demand. Part of it because they love those products and they want to see them, you know, come back for the 21st century. And I think that's fine. I think that's great.
I agree. And it was really nice to have a kind of a question answered, as I talked about in the video and we've been talking about a lot. I wanted something cleared up. I was like, listen, we get a lot of this pushback in the comments. Every time we cover a Nokia phone, there's always someone who's been, you know, rightfully jaded maybe by what happens with old brand names being repurposed by new companies, you know, when they buy the name Polaroid, say, and make a tablet that's Polaroid brand. The camera people had nothing to do with that, obviously. But this is not that situation. You know, HMD Global exists to be the landing pad for all of these displaced old Nokia and old Microsoft employees who are now reconstituting what Nokia was. So it's as close as you can get to the old Nokia. Yeah.
Literally. It's across the street.
And it is literally across the street from the Nokia headquarters building, which I love.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it just, I bring that up because we got confirmation on that at the sit-down.
Mm-hmm.
And we got more specifics on it, but we have a lot to talk about, so we should proceed.
So one of the really interesting things is that these feature phones are designed in tandem by the same people as the Nokia 1 to Nokia 6 to Nokia 8. They spend as much time and expend as much effort designing the cheaper phones. And I think that plays out with the fact that the Nokia 1 at $85 running Android Oreo Go Edition, official name, is...
You missed the parentheses, but that was implied.
How do you make parentheses and sound?
You say...
To go... Whoosh,
Android Oreo parens. Go edition.
Oh, dear.
Close parens.
Close parens. Anti-parens.
Yes. Continue.
Where's my elephant? So I think it's really interesting. So we bring up the Sirocco because it's expensive AF. It's €750 for a phone that's running a Snapdragon 835. But... it's desirable. It's beautiful.
Very.
They don't expect anybody to buy that.
You don't think so?
No.
It's an aspirational phone.
Some people will buy it, but yeah, it's totally an aspirational.
Of course, they made them.
So they're going to continue making money on the low and mid-range is what you're arguing.
Well, what we looked at, when they stood up, they as in all of these presenters at the launch event and unveil all these phones, they say, well, we shipped 70 million phones last year.
Right.
And as we know, they didn't really start shipping phones globally until well into the second quarter of the year.
Right.
They shipped 70 million phones. Over 60 million of them were feature phones.
Whoa.
So when you talk about, Daniel, when you talk about the designers being just as invested in the feature phones, yeah, because that's where they're making money. You can make good money on feature phones still, as it turns out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, that's not to play down their importance in the smartphone world, and we'll talk about their software decisions that kind of fight that point, but feature phones are still a super huge part of the Nokia brand.
And
you're talking about 60-plus million phones in less than a year.
It allowed them to hit the ground running, mm-hmm. right? They inherited that feature phone business from Microsoft along with the branding. And Microsoft, for all of its faults with Windows Phone, they just continued selling those feature phones,
yeah.
right? And now we have this company that's still small, but seems to be profitable, making some money. I think one of the really interesting announcements, the 7 Plus.
Yes.
It's
that's
big
eating potatoes right there.
It's right. So 6-inch, 18x9 display, full HD, right? Not QHD.
Nope.
12-megapixel... dual camera sensor, f1.75, and Zeiss optics.
That's kind of their standard go-to.
And Snapdragon 660 and 4 gigs of RAM, 3800 milliamp hour battery. You argue that this could be a Pixel 2 XL for people who don't want to spend $800. And I think that's a great comparison.
Instead.
Yeah.
I just, when I held the thing and Alex was there as well, we were shooting some video too, It has the same kind of solid metal back with this thick paint on it with just a little bit of grip. And then I'm like, this, you know, it's got the same size screen and the same shape, the same, you know, curved, you know, 2.5D glass on it. It's kind of the same kind of shape. I'm like, yeah, this kind of feels like Pixel 2 XL. I come back, look at the specs. They're within fractions of a millimeter of each other.
Crazy.
They're almost the same size. Of course, they're slightly different in that they have, you know, the 7 Plus has this exposed metal frame, and they do this black and, you know, rose gold thing or white and gold thing, and that's just...
I like that a lot.
They're trying to be a little flashy, and it shows off that the phone is metal. That's cool. The Pixel is a little more understated. And, of course, it doesn't have the glass on the back, but it has the same kind of feel, and obviously it's way more of a value proposition phone. They cut back in all the right places, but the thing feels the exact same. I don't think that's not to condemn the Pixel 2 XL that it doesn't feel good for the price. This thing feels the same when you pick it up, and it's half the price.
So one big change to all of Nokia's phones announced that at Mobile World Congress is that they're moving to either Android Oreo or Android Go for any phone under the Nokia 3.
Yep, which like right that, now, that Nokia 1.
Is the Nokia 1, and will the Nokia 2 be updated?
They have not talked about updates.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of, anyway.
And all future phones will launch with Android 1. This is... Alex, what exactly is Android 1 right now? Because it's kind of confusing.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, Android 1 started back in the day as this very, very low-cost stock Android thing for emerging markets, and it's grown and sort of mutated since then. So right now, Android 1 is sort of, in the West at least, sort of targeted at mid-range phones. So you have decent specs, fast, clean stock Android experience, and... promise with that updates for, I think, at least 2 years after launch.
Yes.
Platform updates and security updates, I believe, is 3 years. So it's your... like sort of the user experience side of it is very close to where we were with the Nexus phones back in the day. It's obviously Google-centric because it's stock Android. It has all the preloaded Google stuff and services. It's not quite as googly as the Pixel experience. You don't get all the extras that you get with the Pixel. It's just you know, pretty much bone-stock Android with a few extras thrown in. And you know, reassurances from Google and the manufacturer about support and updates and all that good stuff. So the interesting thing with Nokia bringing that to all their, you know, everything above 3 is that that includes the flagships as well. That's something we haven't really seen with Android 1.
Yes.
And actually something we haven't seen really in the Android world since the Google Play editions, which no one bought. The difference with Android 1 is that actually... you have companies like Nokia with carrier agreements that actually sell phones in big numbers. Mm-hmm. They're actually putting the weight of their brand behind it in a way that no one ever did with a Nexus or with a Google Play Edition.
So the dramatically different situation here...
Oh, hi.
That was a wonderfully old-school notification.
It is, yeah. What was it? That? Is it 2010?
That
was something going gingerbread?
That was the planet Gemini.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't worry. We'll talk about it later.
Oh, good. Okay.
Poop emoji.
Stay tuned.
You so, jerk. The difference here... is that, and the reason why we have such trouble kind of concisely explaining what Android 1 is that Android 1 is not a build of Android. It's not different. It also, unlike the Google Play Edition or having quote-unquote stock Android, isn't unmodified. The manufacturers are allowed to add things. Nokia has their own camera app that's this
Yes.
Same. It's not the exact same camera app, but it's a new evolution of the camera app that they have on their previous phones.
On the Windows
phones. On the Windows phones, yeah.
Which is like the best pro camera app I have ever used.
That still. Circular dial interface.
RIP Cinemagraph.
Yes. And I'm sorry, you could continue.
I would say pour one out, but we're limited on beer and we got to drink this.
Yeah.
So it's not like Google Play Edition in that... I mean, we saw this with the Moto X4. It was very confusing because the Moto X4 Android 1... God, I think it's the Android 1 Moto X4. You front-load the brand, you know, whatever. It has... the software is no different from the unlocked version in terms of how it looks to the user. It has all the Moto display, Moto actions, Moto camera, all that kind of stuff.
It is missing a couple of them. It's very minor differences. You're right.
To the normal person, you would notice the Android One branding on the back before you would notice the software differences. It does not preclude manufacturers from making changes, but those changes are typically done in a way that, I mean, Google okays it. I kind of think of it as like a verification process. They're basically saying, Google supports what we're doing here.
Right.
More so than just, our device technically passed CTS and right. can have the Play Store on it, which is surprisingly a very low bar.
No kidding.
Very easy. Planet Gemini included.
Wow. Wow. I'm just sitting here minding my own business.
But it is a fantastic point that even the 750 euro Nokia 8 Sirocco can have this exact same software experience. I don't think it limits the potential of that device in any way.
No, and it allows Nokia to focus on hardware, right?
Yeah.
And we've heard this so many times that unless you're, you know, a standing Samsung Experience TouchWiz, which fewer and fewer people are these days, you just want something that works.
Right.
And you just want a version of Android that's not going to get in your way and piss you off. And even though we can't talk about it thoroughly, we can acknowledge that with the Galaxy S9, there are some things that still, to this day, running Oreo are frustrating. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But there are reasons why you want to stick with what Google thinks Android should look like.
And especially if you're a company like Nokia or like HMD, which is, you know, new at this. They don't have a massive legacy of years of software development and of you know, identity behind that software the way a Samsung or maybe even an LG does. Yeah. Well, so they're coming in fresh.
I think you're right. In the Android world, certainly I agree. I will make the point that on Windows Phone, the Nokia phones tended to be prioritized or prized by buyers because they did, in fact, have a lot of custom software that other Windows phones did not.
Yeah.
And it tended to be rather well designed. Not to come off like a fanboy, but it's...
No, like, but they, those were like individual apps. Yeah. So those were built into the operating system.
And it's important to note... Yes. It's important to note that I'm sure that Nokia understands that they have some of that... Look, they're all in on the nostalgia angle.
Definitely.
Not all, as far as you can go with the old different, the ringtones and using the big...
Oh my God.
But branding and all that kind of stuff.
Dude was asking us, hey, what phone do you think we should recreate next?
Exactly.
They're soliciting, you know, requests.
So they understand that angle of it entirely, but they also understand that at this point, it's not necessarily profitable to go down the path of building a ton of custom software.
Mm-hmm.
When they can do something like Android One, be really on the up and up with Google, get help from Google, and add things strategically as they can do them.
Have a Google presenter on stage at the release, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, I agree. I think that they do... I don't want people to sit there and then just kind of think they have no software expertise, because I've gotten the opposite impression. But yeah, I mean, you're buying these for the hardware, pretty much, right?
No, but I would even push back against that. I think that what they're doing is they're utilizing their expertise in the right way. Mm-hmm. They are certainly building custom experiences on the software side, but they're limiting them to apps running on Google's platform.
Which
the same way that you said... Nokia,
the Windows phone still, right.
You know, added to Windows Phone.
Yeah.
And I think that's brilliant, because really there's not a whole lot you need to change about Oreo right now out of the box. I mean, we saw with Essential Phone, you build your own version of Android that looks like Google's version. You
Poop
can
emoji.
Still screw it up. Yeah, I mean, Gemini the crap out of that. So,
Oh, man. Wow. I was going to retweet this. Oh. Not anymore.
Damn wow. It.
Gosh, no. I mean, are we getting close to moving off Nokia? Because I don't want to.
Yeah. No, we're almost off a cliff. Yeah.
the 7 Plus is all anyone's talking about right now, and
oh, I know,
it's crazy.
We got to the top of Reddit on that.
In terms of our audience, you
loved
guys
it.
And gals listening to this, loved the Nokia 7 Plus far more than any other Nokia announcement.
That's true.
It was and funny. Almost every other announcement from this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. I did the Nostalgia Matrix banana phone first. And
as
then
you do.
Everyone in the comments was like, "The Sirocco is out. Go cover that, you idiot." I'm like, okay. I cover the Sirocco phone the next day. I'm like, now I'm out of the woods. And now every other comment is, 7 Plus? What about the 7 Plus? It's the best thing in the show. So I am just want to go on the record as saying I didn't even touch it, and I'm an idiot.
No, you did. You touched the phone because you saw the molds that they made them with.
Dude, I touched the aluminum block you carve a 7 Plus from.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That was fun. So, yeah.
All right, so Nokia is also doing one more thing, but it's not the only company doing it. Google has announced a number of partners for its Android Go software experience. This was announced last year at Google I.O. Holy crap, Google I.O. is coming up soon. Mm-hmm. We just bought tickets. Mm-hmm. But 2017 I.O., Google says, Oreo's coming, and we're going to make it run better on inexpensive products with both optimizations to Oreo as an operating system and to the apps that you know and love.
So different from Android One, this is actually a different, not build, but it's like a configuration.
Yeah.
That you, when you're building the software at the manufacturer level for a phone, and you say, you give it some parameters, you say, this screen is going to be this big, it has this processor, this much RAM and storage. When you say, yeah, this thing has 512 megabytes of RAM, it goes, you want Android Go, and then you get a different slipstreamed version that takes up less room and has a ton of different versions of Google's apps on it.
Which is great in theory, but early
returns.
Previews, they've been a bit dicey.
Early returns are, it happens to be that when you use a $79 phone with a really low-end MediaTek processor and half a gig of RAM, it's not fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
I think the important thing from Google's like, Google's not going to say, yeah, this is going to run as well as a Nokia 7 Plus on a Snapdragon 660. They're saying these manufacturers were going to use Android anyway, and they were going to use a really crappy version of Android that they tried to strip down and shoehorn onto this thing with 8 gigs of storage, and it gives you a gig free to install apps on it. Now, we're just going to at least provide them something that makes a little more sense.
That sounds like OG HTC Desire circa 2010.
Ooh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, so we got Android Go phones from Alcatel,
yep.
Nokia,
yep.
ZTE,
yep.
And they said plenty more on the horizon,
yep. Including Huawei, which is interesting.
Yes.
Actually, yeah, really big for Huawei because in the past, recent news, they've always been trying to get this foot in the door in the US market.
Really? I hadn't heard.
Yeah.
Often unsuccessfully. Well, one way to actually...
Scrappy upstart.
I mean, okay, they're going to get phones on carrier store shelves, but one of the biggest barriers to adoption is their very overbearing software.
Yes.
And if, you know, Huawei wants to sell these less expensive, more budget-oriented phones at bulk, having that familiar Google experience on there is probably going to be way more of a draw than probably what would be an old version of EMUI that's going to be janky and not very enjoyable.
Or a new version of me. Same thing.
And we know, just more to that point, because it's fantastic, Huawei knows how to do volume. They know how to do...
Yes, they're cheap. Very loud.
They know how to do cheap and at scale. And they, you know that they can pump out $80 phones with wider margins than just about anyone else.
Yep.
So they're pretty much custom made for pumping out millions of these things.
Quick question, Andrew.
Yes.
How's my hair looking today?
Minimal.
Minimal indeed. That's because I use a Philips Norelco trimmer. Actually, I don't. That's a lie. But... I'm not lying.
But everything going forward is not a lie.
But I'm not lying about our first sponsor. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about Thrifter, who today, if you're listening yesterday or the next day, I can't even keep track of what day it is.
Yeah.
That's okay, because hopefully the Philips Norelco trimmer will still be on sale for $30. And I found that on Thrifter, among other great deals, and as we do every week, we're going to go around and we're going to talk about our favorite deals that we see on Thrifter.com. And some of them are tech, some of them are not, and some of them are for bald people. So we'll start with Alex, because he's to my left.
Owned.
And I think he's fighting with silently fighting with Michael for his pick.
Alex stole my deal.
Oh, buddy. Aww. Well, Alex, what is your deal for the week?
My deal is the first ever price cut down to $190 for the SanDisk 400GB SD card.
Oh my God.
Just rated A1, has a bunch of other numbers on it. I forget what all these numbers mean. But it's still great at just storing the crap out of your files.
And your Galaxy S9 supports up to 400 gigs of storage. Just
sure
saying.
Does.
Specifically, 400 gigs.
Specifically.
That is the highest capacity currently offered. If it is micro SD XC.
And not a gigabyte more.
Terabytes.
Ah, hey. Derek with the knowledge. All right, well, that is not cheap, but
that,
somehow it
insane.
Seems cheap to me because it's only $190 for 400
it's
gigs.
It's also a micro SD.
But it's UHS 1, which means that it does support 4G, right?
4G?
4G, Jesus.
Does it support 5G? That's
4K. It doesn't. No, I don't think the microSD itself supports 5G. That's,
okay.
That's next year, probably.
It fast.
Needs an antenna.
It fast, indeed. And if you want, B&H is also matching this if you don't want to order it from Amazon. So, wow, that's a lot.
Yes.
Andrew, what's your pick?
Oh my goodness, I'm scrolling through. But I had a backup pick because I know Derek will appreciate this. Logitech's last generation Performance Mouse MX is $40.
Oh, hot damn, that's a good mouse.
I remember I bought two of these over the past several years, and I definitely paid more than $40 for them, something like $100.
Oh, easily.
First one was probably $175. And I felt like it was worth it.
Yeah.
Worth
it at 40.
Yes. This is the last generation. So the new one is the MX Master. If you don't want... And is probably still $125. If you don't want to spend that, where is this available at?
It's a Dell.
Hey, Dell sells computer peripherals, I've heard.
Okay, so
$40.
Because I'm frantically looking up when this mouse came out. Because I was like, I've had this mouse... For a long time.
The year 2000.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, the MX was out in 2009, and it's still an amazing...
No
mouse.
Way is that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the MX Revolution...
Yeah.
The MX Revolution.
No, the MX Revolution came out in 2006.
Gotcha.
And then the Performance Mouse MX, which is this one...
That's one, yeah.
...replaced it in 2009.
It's still amazing. So the only downside is that it's not Bluetooth. It just has the unifying receiver.
Right.
But I use it as a desktop mouse anyway, so...
It doesn't have the tooth?
It doesn't have the tooth. It's only 2.4 gigahertz.
Which means it doesn't disconnect all the time. It's fantastic. No.
Isn't it crazy, though, that the unifying receiver has been around for almost 10 years?
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah.
And you will see them plugged into every single...
Pretty much
Lenovo
every single one.
You've ever seen.
True story.
And also my computer. I'm using the newer version. This one is... I keep it around... It's just the backup, just in case.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, it's for righties only, though.
It is so good that I burned through my first one in about, I think, 4 years.
Literally burned it into the ground.
Didn't even question. Immediately went and bought a second.
Yes, and great point for all you lefties out there, the very small number of lefties out there.
Yeah.
This is not a universal mouse.
Ooh.
You have a tough life, including...
It's an exclusive club of only 96% of the population.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Mr. Mobile.
Yo!
What is your pick, sir?
The planet Gemini.
I don't like you anymore. My item sounds really boring, unless you have a difficult time waking up, as I do.
As many people do. as I know you
this.
Do.
Michael and I have been sharing a room.
Indeed.
This entire week.
Yeah. I'm glad we're finally making it public.
We'll do it live.
He struggles with alarms. How can this help you on your next trip to MWC?
So this is the Philips Wake Up Light. And it is a large disc-shaped item you put on your bedside table, and it wakes you up with, you guessed it, light.
Whoa.
Pure photons. And it's normally $120, and it is marked down to $73. and I actually might go ahead and buy this.
I had one of these in a hotel I stayed in.
Did it work?
And it worked out really well because it's a sort of it does like a sunrise type.
Yeah, it's a very slow fade.
It fades in, and it's not to it will wake you up naturally,
which I like. But did it work?
Yes,
did
it worked.
You were not
great.
Late to whatever you had to go to.
It was one of those nights where it's like you know that I know I have to wake up in time to do this, and so you keep waking up anyway.
Yes,
but it did work.
Cool. This whole week, Michael's woken up violently. So, this is way better.
Indeed.
Derek, what's your pick?
My pick is a Google Wi-Fi 3-pack.
Oh, yeah.
Normally, $299.99. Presently, $259.00.
Nice.
So, you can get Wi-Fi coverage throughout your entire house, unless somehow you have a house that's well over 5,000 square feet. Good for you.
Then you can just buy a single and
buy more modules and add on to it. But yeah, it's a great deal on a very nice Wi-Fi mesh system.
Well, endorsed by our own Jerry Hildenbrand. He compared Google Wi-Fi to three other mesh Wi-Fi systems: Eero,
the Netgear
Orbi, and Ubiquiti. And he decided that even though a couple of them were better in other areas, Google Wi-Fi was the best for most people.
I think that's pronounced Ubiquiti.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, Gemini.
Tutti Frutti. Yeah.
Thank you.
Pepino. So,
Pepino. Sorry, I was late to that.
So mine is only because of its name and because I am a new homeowner.
I thought you picked the Philips Norelco.
I would have, but I have a new one now because this is so good.
All right, well,
I'm a new homeowner, and I need one of these to pretend that I know what I'm doing with repairs. It is the Stanley Fat Max Extreme Rip Claw Hammer.
Oh, and this is extreme with only two E's.
I wasn't sure what you were talking about until the
Stanley Fat Max.
Fat Max.
The Stanley Fat Max Extreme Rip Claw Hammer.
Oh, it's a hammer.
Oh. It's down to $14.21, a historic low price according to Thrifter. The patented torsion control grip means that this will go easy on your wrists and elbows. It's designed to reduce shock while maintaining accuracy. Your purchase is backed by a limited time warranty.
Stanley Fat Max.
It is not a limited time warranty.
You should be a marketer. That's great.
This is a Stanley product. It's not a limited time warranty.
I'm sorry. It's a limited lifetime warranty. Of course. Oh, well, Derek, with the actual knowledge on homeownership.
You take a hammer, just so you know, for it to use a hammer.
Tell me.
You will take a nail
and
put it up against the thing that you wish to secure to the other thing.
Tell me more.
And then you will take the hammer.
And you will use the Gemini to hit it into the wall.
You'll hit it several times. You'll hit your thumb at least once. Twice is preferable.
I don't like this.
It won't limit your life, though. You're good.
Yes, you'll be good.
The warranty lasts the whole time.
A lifetime warranty. So regardless of whether
I don't know, my thumb has a lifetime warranty, though.
Yes.
All right, let's move on. Stanley Fat Max Extreme Rip Claw Hammer. Thank you, Thrifter.
Extreme Rip Claw Hammer.
Thank you, Thrifter, for sponsoring the live MWC podcast. As always, go to thrifter.com for all of your deals and sign up for their daily newsletter to get all your Stanley Fat Max hammer deals in your inbox every morning. All right, let's talk S9. So, where do we start? This is obviously the big kahuna of the show. Every other company basically retreated in like fear and
tail
shock
between their legs
after Samsung announced that it was once again announcing the S flagship at MWC. Alex, what? Okay, so where do we start with this? This is not a huge update, and yet it's probably the biggest Android phone of the year.
They're going to sell countless tens of millions of these
not
things.
Not even probably.
To us, it is, and probably to most people who own a Galaxy S8, S8 Plus, Note 8, not a huge deal, probably not a massively compelling upgrade for them, but that doesn't matter because those aren't the people that Samsung is targeting with this.
Those are already Samsung's customers.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, a few interesting things here. So we have the alignment now with the software experience. It used to be, from year to year, a lot would change in terms of both the hardware and the software. Samsung now has found its groove in terms of both of those things, so the Samsung experience looks largely the same. You hand me an S9 or an S8, I probably wouldn't be able to tell them aside from the different texture of the metal. Easiest way to tell. Everything else is pretty much the same. and of course the camera around the back.
Right. Yeah.
But in terms of just functional things that have changed that make a meaningful difference to using the phone, very little to actually call out. And that's why Samsung was focusing primarily on the camera as the messaging for what you should care about in this phone that is new and special. And even then, if you want the full dual camera experience, you've got to get the S9 Plus. So it's like, well, it's an S year for Samsung. They're on that same TikTok cycle, and that's fine. Doesn't make for a massively exciting announcement, which shows that a lot of enthusiasts are more interested in stuff we've written this week and produced this week around Nokia, or even in some cases even around companies like Asus than they are in the Samsung stuff. But it's still a super important phone.
I quite like that side effect, actually, of like when a big manufacturer like Samsung has what do we call it? Is this a tick year or a talk year?
It's like talk year. Tick is the big one. Talk is the long.
Okay, so talk is like the downstroke.
Tick
or whatever.
Tick tock. Come on, man.
I quite like it because it gives everyone else who was trembling in fear that they were going to be ignored this whole time.
We were expecting a boring show because everyone was going to retreat to like.
It ended up being somewhat
April May.
Yeah, and it ended up being kind of okay.
But the thing about Samsung is they've done this a few years in a row now. Not this subtle. Oh, getting a little up the nose photo.
Just getting a little Project Hemini cameo, bro.
Hemini.
Continue with your point.
Plane Hemini. Samsung has done this a couple times where they have just, they've set a baseline of things that they do. And we noticed this with the Galaxy S8 coming from the S7. They said, okay, we have this, what do they call it, the Galaxy Foundation, where they say, okay, our phone is going to have an SD card slot now.
Yes.
It's going to be waterproof. It's going to have a very fast camera. Sure, you talk about the details. It's going to have a fast camera. It's going to have a fantastic screen. It's going to have wireless charging, fast charging, metal and glass. Like, that's kind of their foundation. So when we go learn about the Galaxy S9, they skipped over a lot of things. Because they just
Because then 90% of it will be stuff you already know.
Right. But they did this with the Galaxy S8 as well. They just skipped over a ton of stuff when they were telling the press about it, having their announcements, because it's just a given for them. There you go. It's just a given for them. They've baked into, for a few years now, they've baked into the buying public that when they get a Samsung phone, they do these things.
Yeah.
They look like this kind of, they have the wireless charging and yada, yada, yada. They kind of look the same. After the Galaxy S6 kind of had those F-ups.
Mm-hmm.
With the small battery and the no SD card and the, people got the mat and the things and all that kind of stuff. They've standardized and that leads to some stagnation.
But, I mean, Andrew, you pointed out in your preview that Samsung's gotten onto a bit of a pattern. So the S6 revamp of design, but a lot of things that the core user base was frustrated about. No waterproofing, the S5, if you remember, did have waterproofing. So
And a
removable battery. Of course, that's not coming back. But S6 didn't. It didn't have a removable battery. It didn't have expandable storage. It wasn't waterproof. But it was beautiful. It was well made. It was
gorgeous.
Metal. Had a great screen and, for the first time, a curved display on a Samsung phone. S7, basically the same foundation, added back all of the features we love from the S5. S8 didn't start from scratch, obviously built from that same foundation, but screwed up a whole bunch of things, including the way you sign into your phone. Mm-hmm. How many people were frustrated with the biometrics on the S8?
Raising my hand right
and
now.
By
there are people that were bothered
lying,
by it,
actually.
And then there are people in denial.
And by the end of the year, how many S8 owners were complaining that their phone's camera was behind the curve when it comes to fidelity, especially in low light?
Yeah.
Now, with the Pixel 2, the Mate 10 Pro, the iPhone 10, the HTC U11, great cameras all. The S8, great product, but the low light capabilities weren't awesome. So this year, Samsung went out to fix all of those issues and added AR emoji for some reason.
Speaking of the biometrics and the authentication stuff, I thought it was interesting that Andrew observed something on Twitter earlier today that S8's sort of side-mounted, weirdly misplaced fingerprints sensor, which I don't think any of us really liked.
You could say that.
Yeah. You still have to get over the muscle memory of always now putting your finger on the S9, putting your finger where like the heart rate monitor is or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the fingerprint sensor has been moved beneath the camera, but you still are putting your finger in the wrong place. And I'm doing it too. And that's because this phone feels exactly like an
right.
S8 in the hand, in both of its sizes.
Right, right. When I pick up my Pixel 2, I don't reach over to the side of the camera because I pick up the Pixel 2 and I know that that's where it is.
Right.
I pick this thing up and I instantly start to do that weird little motion to put the finger up there, and then I, you know, smudge all up the camera lens.
Yeah.
Just don't put your finger up there.
No, exactly.
It's much safer.
give me a couple days and, you know, we'll be to this. I think that we have the S9 Plus version, right?
Yes.
And the fingerprint sensor is so much easier to reach when you think about it.
Yeah.
Normal people are not going to have to think about it because they're probably not going to be upgrading if they have Galaxy S8.
Right.
Everybody else, it's so much easier to reach. It's super fast. And you pointed out something interesting, Michael, that the way you teach it what your finger looks like is it's weirdly different in a better way.
And super way more efficient. Yeah. So we're signing into the S9, and instead of, I'm all set to do the regular thing we were all trained to do. Like, put your finger down on the pad, lift it up, put it down the pad, lift it up, move it around, get the edges, do the thing. I'm like, ugh. And it tells me to slide my finger across. And I'm like, what? What is this? 2011? Is this a Motorola Atrix? What's going on?
I miss that phone.
And I do it. And as my finger is sliding across that tiny fingerprint sensor, which takes, you know, no time, it gives me this crazy little haptic buzz.
Mm.
As though for each micron of movement, it's capturing data. It's like saying, yeah, okay. This all takes place in a quarter of a second. And then it's registered.
Cool.
It took me 2 swipes.
And you're not getting false readings at all.
No, it works well.
So it's not like you have to swipe your finger to log in. You just register.
Just swipe it to teach it, and then it works like a regular fingerprint.
Rather than doing 5 or up to 10 presses and doing the relearning and all that.
Right.
And I've noticed it's so damn fast that even if I'm just like, you know, wiping around the camera lens or something, it'll unlock.
Huh.
I mean, you can move your finger over it,
yes,
and it'll unlock. You don't have to do that explicit, like, place the finger on the spot.
Yeah.
So the other thing, Alex, is that Samsung combined both of its facial biometric features into something called intelligence scan.
You could say it fixed a biometric blunder.
Huh? Hey. No, I wouldn't say that. That's not... I'm joking. So... does it fix it? Is our long year old nightmare over?
I think it's certainly an improvement from what I've seen, and I guess you guys can
speak to this
more than me. Yeah, I mean, it would be hard to be worse. Last year you had one that worked in the dark and one that worked in daylight, and you couldn't use both at the same time.
Right.
And now you have the best of both in that they can both be active at the same time, and so in theory that means it's a lot more versatile when it can actually unlock, and you have that viable alternative when you either, you know, if you just don't want to use the fingerprint scanner, or if it's inconvenient or whatever. But that's the theory. How have you guys found it in reality?
In my experience, it's been slower than I expected.
But so you're going from having used the 10 though, so you've been using a 10 sort of on the side for a little while.
What, an iPhone 10?
iPhone 10, yeah.
Not really. I'm using it to power the backup mic for this show, but it's not really. It's only because it only has an iOS app. The iPhone 10 does have a very good and fast face unlock. I think what it spoiled me was OnePlus 5T, which has ridiculously fast face unlock.
Really fast.
Not at all secure, but whatever. It's really quick. But I mean, you know what? Honestly, I don't want to opine about it officially because it's only been a day, and I've been, you know, it's MWC. It's so crazy. I haven't been taking notes, so I felt like it was a little slow today. Yeah, maybe I'll think differently about that. Like I thought differently about the iPhone X after 2 days.
I don't even My thing is, I don't even care. They could have taken the iris scanner out of this thing, and I don't give a damn, because the fingerprint sensor is where I can reach it,
right.
And that's just what I want to do. When I set up the phone, Michael and I both, we set up the fingerprint sensor.
Yeah, of course.
Is anybody not going to set up the fingerprint sensor? No, because the iris scan doesn't work for all the apps.
Yeah.
Anyway, even if it was fantastic at unlocking those... the lock screen, it wouldn't matter because you still want that fingerprint sensor, just like we saw with the OnePlus 5T.
Mm-hmm.
The face unlock for most people is all they really want. Like this iris scanner lives in this weird middle ground where it takes longer to authenticate. Yes, it's dramatically more secure than a face unlock, but it doesn't work for anything but Samsung Pay.
Mm.
And it probably never will, because there's not going to be some... Like, it's Samsung having to release the API to developers,
right.
Being like, please add this to your app. And they're like...
No, wait, your phone has a fingerprint sensor, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, best case scenario, in a year's time, Google adds it to Android P, and your phone gets it with the update. That's still a long time without any apps that could potentially use it.
Sure, I mean, when every phone has a notch with the same sensors as the iPhone X, maybe... As we'll learn later, at least half the phones announced at MWC have that notch, so whatevs. Okay, so let's talk about the biggest change to the Galaxy S9, the camera. So not only is it a big change from the S8, but it's between the two phones, the S9 and the S9 Plus, there is significant change in that. For the first time ever, there is a difference between both products.
Yeah, but it's really tough. We're still trying to figure this out because we only have an S9 Plus right now.
Yeah.
So we're not living with the smaller S9. It's this weird situation because they upgraded what I would consider a pretty dramatic upgrade to the main camera with this changing aperture lens and a new sensor style that's faster and promises better processing, less noise, finer edges. And then the second sensor and lens on the S9 Plus is, far as we can tell, the same as the Note 8.
Yeah, it may as well be the same sensor. We don't know.
It's not this newer sensor. It's not a variable aperture. It's not even a different aperture from the Note 8.
F2.4.
And so the big story is the main camera,
right,
which you get on both phones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the second camera is not really adding that much. Live focus still is a bit hit or miss. Although some people like the idea of portrait mode, they also like the fact that the Pixel 2 can do it without a second lens, but that's, you know, an aside. And what Alex and I were looking at today is, a lot of the times when you hit that 2x button, just like every other phone with two lenses, it's doing a digital crop on the main sensor and lens, because that's a higher end sensor and lens. And that gulf is even bigger on the S9 Plus than it is on the Note 8.
Right. Mm.
So you're more likely to use that main sensor when you hit the 2x button because you're shooting through an f1.5 lens. And it's so much more light than f2.4. And the sensor is so much better at processing that I'm kind of wondering if it doesn't really matter that it has a second lens.
I mean, people like telephoto. Not everybody at this table loves the addition of twice the focal length. Instead, I think everybody here would agree wide angle is probably preferable most situations. But a lot of people like it. And one thing that I would say is, I haven't used the phone much, but when I tested it at the S9 launch event, I did take a few portraits of unsuspecting attendees. And I zoomed in on the hair and the areas where the Note 8 screwed up in terms of differentiating between foreground and background subject. And hair is a big problem with these algorithms, right?
Sure.
And,
and glasses.
And the S9 nailed it. They nailed it every time. There wasn't a strand that was blurred out. And this is very difficult, which leads me to believe that that Samsung did a lot of work either figuring out how foreground subjects should be differentiated from background subjects, or just that the sensor and f1.5 lens are working better with that secondary sensor to generate more accurate portrait photos.
But my... Is that a portrait mode you're showing me?
I just shot a live focus of Andrew.
All right, we're going to do this live.
And, so, great radio.
Yeah. And aside from... I took it all the way up to 7, so the bokeh is really creamy. And some overhead direct light makes Andrew look... we're basically having a memorial service for Andrew.
Sorry for our loss.
Yeah.
No, this... I mean, this is not... This isn't... perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, there's still some things around here, which I expected. I was going to like, surely
but we're in pretty
great.
Terrible lighting.
Yeah,
right
this
now.
Is questionable.
I'm going to pixel it up while you talk about some other stuff. Let's see.
Yes, it can get better. You also have an f1.5 lens at your disposal.
Right.
I was taking some tight photos of this door that is inexplicably hanging sideways on the wall of this apartment that has some very ornamental brass work on it. And I took a shot of it at an angle. There's this ornamental brass stuff that's 5 inches across. And if you shoot it at an angle, the front and back of it are out of focus in a range of 5 inches.
That's really wild.
So when you have that, this is why they have the variable aperture, because not everybody can always handle that super shallow depth of field when they just want to take a photo of something and have a lot of it in focus. You're approaching the point where at f1.5, you can take a straight-on portrait of somebody and their nose is in focus and their ears are out of focus.
Mm. The problem is, though, you have to get so close to the
of course.
It's a very intimate portrait.
Yeah.
Of course. But that's available. That you can do some really cool stuff with f1.5 and it's never going to have weird visual aberrations in the same way that live focus... fake, quote-unquote, portrait.
That's great. I think that's awesome.
I think that's just a perfect example that this is a different beast.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the photos that I've been taking have been, okay, photo nerd moment. I'm taking low-light photos in lots of bars in Barcelona, it turns out, at roughly 2 to 4 in the morning, as you do. And they're very dark. You know, bars are, you know, cool scenes when you're not in a super divey bar. I'm taking photos that are only ISO 150, ISO 200, in a dark bar at 3 in the morning.
So that means, for anybody who doesn't know, that means these photos aren't grainy at all.
No, they're not. And it's extreme. I mean, part of that's the sensor, but part of that's, if you're shooting at f1.5, it gives you a lot of options.
Right.
And these are, the shutter speeds are like 1/20th of a second, 1/40th of a second. They're not leading, you know, leaving it wide open for a long time, and you're not getting
any blur. Which opens the possibility for motion blur, right?
Yeah, of course. So it's doing this, you know, the right stuff so far.
Okay, so camera quality should be better, but
I can unequivocally say it is better than the S8. Not even close.
Okay, but there's one more feature that Samsung is touting as a selling feature, as a competitor to Apple's AR-focused Animoji.
What are you, Pepinos? Give me a beer.
There you go. It's called AR Emoji, and it's kind of weird.
I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Cool.
JK, you proceed. I just forgot to cover this in my video, so I'm sorry.
It's important to talk about,
yeah,
because
then.
This is going to be an important differentiator for the Galaxy S9.
Is it?
For some... consumers, absolutely. I have no doubt that people want to create cartoon versions of the... Look at the success of Bitmoji.
Sure.
You're basically creating a Bitmoji character in the Samsung camera app and sharing it across the internet.
Look at the rise and fall of the fad called Bitmoji.
It's not a fad, man. Snapchat bought it for a lot of money, and they've introduced...
And now look at the rise and fall of the fad of Snapchat.
No, well, here's my thing. I think you're absolutely right that it's an important part of the story, but I think Samsung's implementation of the whatever they're calling their Animoji, AR emoji
is the thing.
It's I found it to be rather poor when compared to the iPhone X's face capture replication.
It's absolutely poor.
And so I don't know how much that'll affect how often people use it, but
so we won't. I know that for a fact. None of us at this table will. It's However, I think it's important to acknowledge that people buy these phones who have nothing to do with us or any, like, we don't have anything in common.
I agree, but my point is if the execution sucks, nobody's going to use it.
Bitmoji kind of sucks and still used a lot.
Fair. You people are not discriminating.
No.
But that is the point of accessibility and people actually being able to use it is one thing that AR Emoji has going for it. You can just open up the camera. You see the new camera interface makes it easy to switch between modes. One swipe, two swipes, you're at AR Emoji. Mm-hmm. You can record a photo, record a video, take a photo, and just instantly share it anywhere. Just like Bitmoji.
Yeah.
And that's why that is an apps comparison. The Bitmoji angle versus the AR Emoji.
Okay, just want to disclose something. If we get over 20 mentions of the word Bitmoji, Jarrett gives me $20. So keep going, guys. So the other thing that this kind of that stands out to me here is everybody's going in on AR, right? Every company is trying to tout their own version of personalized AR. And during MWC, Google announced AR Core 1.0. And Google Lens is now getting a whole bunch of new features. So just as an aside from S9, Google is now baking AR Core into way more phones, including the Galaxy S9, but dozens of other phones as well. It's not just going to be available on the Pixel 2 and the Galaxy S8 and Pixel 1. So, you know, to me this says companies haven't quite figured out what they're doing with AR yet. AR is still kind of weird and boring and stupid. But it has potential, and I think that's really interesting.
They're at least creating something with it.
Right.
I'll give you that. This is far more interesting than any Bixby Vision thing that's ever been announced.
Because it's Bixby, period.
Because it works, and yes, it is fun, and it's accessible.
Yeah.
Whereas, if you think about something like even Google Lens, which has lots of utility, it's still not very accessible, and you don't think about it's not part of your regular motion to do something like that. But you can easily see the benefit of open the camera, switch to selfie. You can have, you know, you can turn yourself into a bunny rabbit that when you bite, it shows a carrot being jammed.
But there's no, I mean, go to Andrew's preview just to see the GIF Alex made.
It's so
of Andrew, like. Dual screening, chomping on that carrot.
Chomping the carrot.
That's worth it, man.
Yeah. It's a bothy.
Also, can we talk about how, like, the body language of all of you just, like, talking about AR emoji?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I'm out, man. Like, I'm done.
I'm sorry, and I didn't mean to do
that. No. It's telling. It's telling because what it says to me is phones, to many people, they're just utilities. They're kind of tools that we buy to make calls. Well, nobody makes calls, but to do what we got to do. And part of that is opening Snapchat and sending Bitmojis to people.
Sure.
And part of it is not doing that. And it's tons of other stuff that has nothing to do with AR. And I find that really interesting that Samsung spent a large portion of its very, very expensive event talking about a feature that a large percentage of its user base is never going to touch.
Last year when it talked about Bixby.
That's kind of different.
But no,
aimed at a different demographic.
Yeah, but I think that dovetails nicely with something that happened at the briefing for the S9 where we spent an awful lot of time on these supposedly new Bixby features.
Okay, yeah, let's talk Bixby. Because I'm going to go pee.
Okay. That, I mean...
My goodness.
You know, I got the distinct impression, and it was later found to be sort of true, is that we were having a padded-out session because there just wasn't that much new stuff to talk about outside the camera. And what do you know? The thing where you point your camera at a food item and have Bixby identify the calorie count? Well, I forgot, but that was announced back at CES.
Yeah.
It's still not really complete yet.
Shades of V30S in that.
Indeed. Point your camera at a sign and watch it translate magically in real time. Well, Google Translate's been doing that for... Oh, it's powered by Google Translate.
It actually works not as well as Google Translate in the standalone. Because it doesn't have context of the sentence that it's translating. So.
And it was also, you can plug it into this dock and get Dex. That's the exact same Dex as before. It just it's in a different dock.
Right, and the point your selfie camera at your face and apply some virtual makeup, actually kind of a cool feature and works really well. Like, I mean, not it's funny, yes, to see lipstick on my face, but like it tracked my lips pretty well.
It's
like,
not that funny. I mean, you look pretty good.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man. But then, like the cap on that being, and then you can. We have a partnership with, you know, Sephora and whatever to like hop right over and buy it right within Bixby. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I hope
that they have somebody tracking the reports of how many people have purchased something through Bixby on Sephora.
Oh, I'm sure
it's in the low double digits.
No, but that is. I mean, I know because we've seen it at CES. This is getting better and better. Every time we go to every year since 2013, we've gone to Showstoppers or Pepcom, and there's been some installation where you stand in front of a modified mirror, and a phone takes a photo of your face and it applies digital makeup. And in 2013, it looked like crap.
Right.
And in 2018, it looked perfect.
And like live perfect. Like you don't take a picture. You just look at the phone like it's a mirror, and your reflection has makeup on it.
So scoff at the fact that Michael has lipstick on.
Right.
But the fact that the technology has come as far as it has in such a short time, I think that's the really interesting part of this.
I agree.
So let's talk pricing and availability. So Galaxy S9, it's not more expensive than the Galaxy S8.
What? I was told it was $100 more.
Than the Galaxy S8?
I'm making fun of the people who said that it was $100 more.
Damn it, I can't.
Wow.
I can't do it live.
Because it's not.
No, it's not. But I mean, it kind of is, because at some carriers, they're marking it up.
But that was the case. That's the case every year.
Yeah, yeah. So, Andrew, why don't you
Carrier Cons Consumer, film at 11.
So, $720 bucks for the Galaxy S9 unlocked. It's going to be available.
Yeah, I believe so. 720?
720.
And
729, sorry.
And 840.
And 840.
Plus.
Okay, so.
Which is somehow reasonable.
I guess. Did the iPhone X change everything?
Are just stupid expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nokia 8 Sirocco is 749 euros.
Hey, man.
True.
It ain't free to live that Rocco life.
It's stainless steel.
it's somehow, I mean.
It's Hantori steel.
The interesting thing is it's always relative to your area, your carrier. I mean, we know that AT&T is charging something like $85 more for both phones, nearly 15% more on either one, making the Galaxy S9 Plus $920 or something like that they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's it's only $10 cheaper than the Note 8 in some cases.
Ask that exact question.
Because they're basically the same phone, so it makes sense.
100% they are.
But I don't know if it is the iPhone X effect or what it is, but the... Or the fact, I mean, the Pixel 2 XL got extremely expensive compared to the Pixel 2, and we thought, oh, the Pixel 2 is kind of a bargain at $650.
Yep, but true story.
It would have felt like an extreme price gouge for this phone to be dramatically more expensive than its predecessor, and it's basically the same price.
Is it worth it?
Versus...
Should you buy it? If you have a Galaxy S6, LG V10, I don't know. Like, is this the phone to buy for 2018 right now?
I think it's the S9 in particular is going to sell like hotcakes because it's going to be a default choice. At that price, you're going to get AT&T selling you that on a 30-month installment plan. And it's going to be like $23 a month. And it's going to be really hard for people to say, no, I want to spend much more on something else. It's going to be completely stomachable at, you know, $20 to $25 a month. That's going to be really easy. The S9 Plus is, you know, it starts to obviously get into that area where you're talking mid-800s to, in some cases, rip you off mid-900 range. Those are always bigger buying decisions. I mean, that's just... When you're in a stone's throw away from iPhone X, $1,000, obviously you're paying more than $1,000 with tax and all that kind of stuff. That's a little tougher. It's all about what you're coming from.
Alex, most people, basically everybody does not who has a Galaxy S8 or S8 Plus does not have the Oreo update yet. a year from now, we're probably going to be talking about how nobody with the Galaxy S9 has the Popsicle update or whatever it is. How bad is that? Is Samsung way behind everybody else, or is it just working on a scale that is unprecedented and needs to take that extra time?
It's bad. A lot of manufacturers are bad with it. There are still some very high-profile companies that haven't updated Oreo. Samsung is more visible than most. But then Samsung has more just stuff to include in that update to keep working than anyone else as well. They have their own VR ecosystem that isn't part of Android to begin with. They have their own desktop dock that isn't part of Android to begin with. They have everything they're doing with dual cameras, edge screen, in some cases the S Pen. So there's more stuff to get working there, especially this generation, because they don't have Project Treble to make that easier. The theory is if they're doing everything right with the phones that have just launched, that next year it will be easier to go from shipping on Oreo to Android P or whatever next year.
Right.
This time next year is going to be the ultimate test of that, as to whether that is just, how much easier does this separation of the manufactured stuff and the core Android OS, how much easier does it make to actually get the job done in the real world? There are, of course, other hurdles in the way, like carriers and stuff. It's easy to be the cynic and say that, it's going to be the same, it's just an inherent problem with Android, which it kind of is. But I think there's a decent chance that with Treble kicking in fully for phones released in this cycle, that maybe things will be a little bit better next year. I'm hopeful. It won't be like within months of the final code dropping in August or whatever. I think maybe there'll be a fighting chance that we'll be in a slightly better position this time next year.
I think that's a good way to put it. It'll be slightly better. Everything next year will be slightly better. Derek, I have a question for you to wrap up the S9 discussion.
Sure.
So we have the iPhone X launching in November 2017. It was a couple months later than most iPhones have launched. The Galaxy S9 is earlier than it was last year. We're launching on March 16th versus April 21st. Last year, if you'll remember, the Galaxy S8 was delayed because of the Note 7 problems.
Right.
And Samsung wanted to make sure that its battery testing facilities were up and running, and that its reputation wasn't in tatters.
And that
everything.
Phones weren't blowing up.
Exactly. Yeah. And so now these two phones are launching closer together. Somebody goes to an AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint store, tomorrow or when the phone's available.
Okay.
Which phone do they buy? What pulls them into the Galaxy S9 these days?
That's a good question.
But the S9 or the S9 Plus?
No.
Part of it's going to come down to the fact that both of them just look spectacular sitting on the shelf now. And
you think, I look at this and I think it looks kind of boring.
It looks kind of boring, but when it's sitting on the store shelf, that screen is on, and they've picked a really bright, colorful background that makes that AMOLED screen just pop. But what's going to drive, honestly, the most sales for either one is brand loyalty.
Samsung. I've heard of Samsung before.
I have a Samsung phone. I like it, and I'm going to go buy another Samsung phone.
Right.
I don't think there's a whole lot of switching now anymore between the two operating systems.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I was getting. It's basically people going into stores or buying phones unlocked that have bought the same phones from the same company before.
Yeah.
One thing that I find interesting, though, is that every year Tim Cook makes a point of noting how many Android users switch over to iOS and how happy they are now with iMessage or whatever. But the reality is that Samsung's still selling 50, 60 million flagships a year.
Yeah, if 10 million people switched over from iOS to, or from Android to iOS, I can basically guarantee that 10 million people also switched from iOS to Android.
Right.
There will always be people who switch, but the vast majority of people are, unless they are massively unhappy with whatever phone they have for whatever reason, are going to buy the next version. People do the same thing with cars, they do it with bread and cereal. They're going to buy what they know.
I also think that I would love to see the stats on that from a cost of your previous phone situation, people in the cheaper... I mean, this isn't anything amazing or new either. If you have a cheaper phone, you're more likely to just get the next cheap thing and not have as much brand loyalty, especially if you're buying, you know, whatever, like a Boost Mobile branded phone, the right. ZTE white labeled or something like that, that was $149. You're just as likely to go in and pick the next thing that's $149. Mm-hmm. At the higher end, there's a far more of that, not just the brand loyalty, but the feature and design loyalty and all that kind of stuff as well.
For sure.
Just like if you're somebody that you may have, I'm trying to think of what an old but still sold, like you can still go buy an iPhone 6S, right, directly from Apple. You're going to have less brand affinity to that buying a 6S today because that was a cheaper phone for you. You bought for $350 versus if you went out and bought an iPhone 10, you're going to feel far more invested in that at three times the price.
And I mean, we have the stats to prove that people are still very interested in learning about the Galaxy S7 and, you know, the LG V20. Even though those are not new phones, and they, you know, they have longer shelf lives than I think even we give them credit for. So, I mean, what the takeaway I glean from this is the Galaxy S9 replaces the Galaxy S8. The S8 isn't going anywhere.
No,
it's going to be available at a discount. It's still a fantastic phone. It's going to be updated to Oreo imminently.
Yeah, and it's actually aged fairly gracefully. I don't handle my 8 and then suddenly I'm like, oh crap, the Samsung software is slowing down again. And it's actually a very, very usable phone day to day still.
It is. I think the Galaxy S9 is for people who already own a Galaxy S7,
yes,
or S6, or an LG G5, or another high end Android phone from a couple of years ago.
No, nobody owns an LG.
For the five people who went out and bought, I actually saw one in the wild a couple of weeks ago.
No way.
It blew my mind.
Yeah, I
doubled. It was a double.
Did they have a friend plugged into the bottom of that thing?
Nobody. Nobody who has an LG G5 has friends.
Whoa. Gonna get some heat for that.
The address for that is andrew@androidcentral.com.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting three emails from every single G5 owner.
So I think to prompt more negative emails, let's talk a little bit about the Sony Xperia XZ2.
I have a question. Am I the only one in this room who really quite likes this new direction from Sony?
No, I like this direction. I'm ambivalent about the phone.
Okay,
that's good. So Sony has made the same phone since 2013.
Yes.
We can all agree on that.
Yes.
And this year it's making a slightly different phone with, I would say, a renewed vitality in the design department, but the same branding, the same problems
is it the same problems?
Well, let's talk about it. Yeah. So the Xperia XZ2 and XZ2 Compact, Alex is looking at me very skeptically. So let's go over the basics. This is Sony's take on the 18x9 phone. It's got a fingerprint sensor in the US, once again. Thank you, 2014. I think that deserves a slow clap.
Yeah.
It reduces but not eliminates the bezels. So it looks kind of like a Pixel 2 XL rather than a Galaxy S9. A
little more generic.
Yeah.
So it's generic AF.
Wait.
Whoa.
Hold up. I think the Pixel is a much more generic looking phone.
Oh, yeah. The Pixel is very generic.
Yeah. I mean, PandaPixel less. So.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that it's super generic. It looks like the phone that anybody could have designed.
No question about that.
Whereas Sony was the only one making that
omnibalance thing. Yeah, say what you will about that.
Which apparently everybody hated.
By the way, I was bored to tears of that design, but the commenters will come out to defend it because it was an aesthetic achievement. There was actual balance in the old design.
There was, and actually that was the one good thing about that design.
Right.
This, it seems like they've just tossed everything out, whereas I maybe would have liked, like I said, this is a design that pretty much, you know, it's there's no real identity to it the way there was with this thing before. say what you like about them sticking with the same design language for 5 years, doing that establishes a pedigree. I would much rather see like an 18x9 or 19x9, a reinterpretation of that.
Yes.
With all the good things about that that symmetry that people are used to from Sony phones, instead of this generic just thing that we have now.
It's a good point.
But you have to say that Sony had a pedigree with that design, but the pedigree was that nobody bought it.
Yeah.
So it, we yeah. loved it as
that's a purebred if I've ever.
I love taking photos of the last 5 years of Sony phones.
Not with.
I love I love taking photos of the next bit Robin. I love taking photos of a lot of these cool
iconic
phones. A lot of the HTC One M7, M8, M9.
Yeah.
Very interesting looking phones. Nobody actually liked them enough for those to be successful phones, even if they were good designs and interesting designs. It sucks to see it go more to the generic side of things, but you can't argue that Sony had to change that design.
But every phone looks the same. You look at the back of the Xperia XZ2, and it looks like a Xiaomi phone. Alex, how'd I do?
Xiaomi.
Thank you. It looks like an HTC.
U11, certainly.
It looks like every phone released in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But, so here's what's interesting. Sony...
But they had to do something.
They do, okay.
And this is what happened.
Sony is doubling down on what works for it, and there's not much there, so let's talk about them.
No.
Nobody's buying these phones, and in the US at least, they haven't had a good couple of years because of the fingerprint sensor problem.
Yeah.
So this phone has a fingerprint sensor on the back. It has haptics that you feel.
Ugh.
Whoa.
Isn't that what you're supposed to do with haptics, is feel them?
Daniel's giving you death eyes.
I am. I really like this feature.
You do?
Yes.
He specifically noted when he was done using this phone that the haptics were on the short list.
I love this feature. I think it's phenomenal.
So let's clear this up. Okay?
It's basically Sony has taken the rumble pack from the DualShock 4 controller, and it has transported it into its Xperia phone. Okay. That doesn't sound like it's useful until you're...
Because it's not.
Until you're watching one of Mr. Mobile's videos in your hand, and his tenorous voice is booming through your phone.
Sirocco.
And you're feeling that phone move. It's awesome.
I
love it.
Hot gimmicky trash.
Of all people, talking about hot gimmicky trash.
You're literally using a Gemini right
in front of my eyes, and you were talking about hot gimmicky trash.
I hate the mere concept of this.
Oh my God!
Don't you? When they showed it on the video, I was like, "So you literally put a rumble pack in a phone, and it's gonna like jump out of my hands when I'm watching Independence Day on my phone, and that's why I'm gonna buy this."
For how many years have we been complaining that?
Independence Day.
Haptics.
It has lots of boom.
Haptics on Android phones are crap.
We've been complaining a lot. And then when LG redid it with the V30, and I was like, oh my God, this is what haptics should be. I was like, great. When Samsung redid it with the S8, I was like, awesome. This is what haptics should be. Again, haptics being misappropriated to make your boom movies and boom songs feel boomier. It's just dumb.
It's just not a feature. This is something. Haptics are something
you haven't used it. So I want to.
I'm saying haptics in general is not a feature.
It absolutely is a feature.
No. You notice when it's bad, like on the Nokia 8 Sirocco or on the Essential phone or on some other
Razer phone as well.
Yes, you notice when it's bad, but Sony has lots of other shit to fix. Other than the haptics.
I disagree.
The haptics completely. On the haptics
you notice
on the last
when it's good.
Yeah, and you do notice when it's good.
You like, really notice it when it's bad.
Absolutely.
I hate misappropriation.
You notice when you try to take a photo with a Sony phone and it's bad.
Sure.
That is more important than the DualShock.
Taking the twisting dirt road into the weeds and it's now a garbage fest. Listen.
I haven't used this phone.
Haptics...
I like that they committed to the idea. I don't think it's going to move any phones. First of all,
well,
second of all, I don't really think that that putting a rumble pack in a phone for when you watch movies or videos on your phone, is going to have a meaningful effect on consumers.
It seems like one of those features that starts with someone at a high level saying, "Wouldn't it be cool if?"
Right.
No, it's never cool.
Wouldn't it be cool if you sold phones?
Yes. If I want rumble with my bass, I want to feel it in my chest.
Fine.
Not indeed. In my hands or vibrating off the table.
Derek's all about that.
Fair enough. And I don't dispute that using it for a two-hour film is silly. And it's not going to happen. But what it does is it adds a vibration motor that's twice the size of a regular one, which means that...
Two of them, I believe.
It should be able to offer more accuracy. And that's what I've been wanting in a phone for a very long time. The V30 did it really well.
Excellent
yeah.
haptics. Probably the best haptics in, arguably, in any Android phone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is not precluding accuracy. This is not them adding a Hemi to a sedan and being like, okay, you know, this can only, you know, rev up to, you know, 8,000 RPM and you know, drive off a bridge.
Move on to it.
As a car man, I fully appreciate this analogy. Yeah.
But what I mean by that is what I notice about it is that when you turn the volume down, there is subtlety there, and that it is possible to achieve the accuracy of a V30 from these haptics.
Sure, I'm all for that. Yeah, I think we're in violent agreement on that.
Oh, I'm violent.
I know it. So, okay, so we've got that haptic stuff, and in concert...
What about the rest of the phone?
In concert with that, we've got these two dual front-facing speakers, which are actually dual front-facing speakers, and I know probably...
Not like this loser front-facing speaker on the Galaxy S9.
Which, I mean, kinda. Like, not saying the S9's front-facing speakers
and the U11
speakers
and
are
a bunch
not,
of other phones.
Yeah, I've never really quite liked this hack that manufacturers do of overpower the earpiece, fine, but then put your bottom speaker on the bottom edge. I get it. It's manufacturing is hard. A lot of people don't care. But if you're going to make the effort to do front-facing speakers, if they can both be pointed at your face, that's great. And this phone accomplishes that and does a pretty good job of it.
I agree. I think... Anyway, I don't think that this is the best phone of 2018. But I'm a Sony... I'm not a fanboy, but I support Sony's efforts in mobile. I think that there are a lot of redeeming qualities about this phone.
Qi, wireless charging being one of them.
Absolutely. And the fact that it took them this long to make this big change is infuriating. But the fact that they're here now and they're doing it and they're selling phones in the US with fingerprint sensors, I like it. I think the XZ1 was a good phone. The XZ2 is a better phone. Whether it's going to cost $1,000...
Yeah, what's the price on this, champ?
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know when it's coming out. And definitely no carrier deals.
Well, really? Because Verizon has sold Sony phones.
Not going to happen.
Mm.
Think it's going to land on any U.S. carrier?
I guarantee you. It was confirmed to me that it wasn't coming.
What U.S. carrier would waste their time with a Sony phone?
AT&T. They waste their time with anyone.
ZTE Axon M. What up? I was told this by the VP of Sony Mobile. It's on the record. This is not coming to a U.S. carrier.
Oh, for F's sake.
So...
Wait, hold up. But the one thing we are really skipping over here, and this is the place where it really does own the Galaxy S9.
Wow.
Is in the feature that Sony originated on smartphones.
Right, yes. Headline.
960 FPS, extremely high speed capture for extremely slow motion playback.
So good.
Which, by the way,
what resolution?
There's a caveat.
Woof. Woof.
Dang.
Back in the garbage trash forest.
No. I mean, it's a legit caveat, but it's not.
No,
it doesn't impugn it.
I know. On the XZ Premium last summer, which I reviewed last summer, this was limited to 720p at 1,000 frames a second, almost. On the Galaxy S9, it is still limited to 720p.
Mm-hmm.
On the new Sony, what the hell is it?
XZ2.
God, I hate these names. It is a full HD capture at almost 1,000 frames a second. Yeah, it's only for 0.3 seconds or whatever it is, but that's all you need to get some amazing, amazing footage. So I'm super excited to try that out.
There is an important caveat to what I think we're already inside a caveat, is that the Samsung is easier to use. Because with the Sony, you still have to manually decide the moment at which you want to capture the super slow-mo. Samsung draws a box around an area and waits for a motion inside it, which is super smart. And if you're going to rip off a feature, you should improve it. And Samsung achieved that.
I think there are two caveats there.
Ooh.
The first one is the software, because 99% of the time you want to use that automatic one that the Galaxy S9 has.
Yes.
Yes, that's slightly finicky, but having also reviewed the XE Premium, when you only have a 0.2 second window, it's finicky.
It's tricky.
You're screwed.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
Because it plays back in 6 seconds or whatever.
Right.
So if you have to trim any amount of that 6 seconds...
Yeah.
You might as well have not gotten that shot.
You just hope for the best.
And the whole point of slow motion is that you get the shot.
Yeah.
And it can really be discouraging if you don't.
And this is why it works better with stuff like ocean waves or birds or something like that.
Or a car driving by.
Or Michael's model ships.
Exactly, yes. But if you're trying to get somebody jumping off a boat, which I tried to do, like that person had to jump 3 times before I captured something even remotely usable. Because I just couldn't, I wasn't quick enough. Or we didn't get the timing right.
The other caveat, which we have to see just from doing it side by side, is the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus have OIS on their cameras.
True. Oh, indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Sony not big on the OIS,
but really big on the OIS.
East.
lots of mistakes.
Muzzle song. So, Sony Xperia XZ2, available sometime later this spring. We still don't know when. Sony's got to start announcing phones with release dates and prices.
I mean,
you're better than this.
They're outdoing Motorola on the bullcrap lead-up time.
Yeah, let's see that. So, a couple things that we either won't be able to buy or just won't buy in general.
Why did I even come here?
The Vivo Apex concept phone and the Asus Zenfone 5. Let's talk about these. The Vivo Apex concept phone.
Yeah,
it's neat. What is this thing?
This thing is badass, is what it is. Vivo had kind of just worked at this cottage industry of getting lots of coverage by creating cool things that you're probably never going to see.
Flashback to CES 2018.
It's the Razer thing that they take some...
Right.
It's how they get the coverage.
One, because they may just never do it in a production device, and two, you may live outside of Southeast Asia. You know, a lot of us do. They did this cool thing where, of course, they call it a quote-unquote bezel-less phone. It's got, 4, 5, 6% screen to body ratio. So there's still some bezel there. There's pretty much always going to be something there. But the way that they did it is not, I mean, we've seen Samsung do demos of foldable screens and bezel-less stuff in a, on a piece of plexiglass in a demonstration form. Not a functional device with all of the components necessary to be a fully working phone. So this Apex phone, it's like this concept, they fixed a lot of stuff. Instead of having so they don't have a notch, which is all the rage nowadays, I've heard, and that's a really cool thing to do.
I hear.
Vivo went with bone conduction speakers. They went with a proximity sensor embedded in the display.
Cool.
A fingerprint sensor that's embedded in the display and is functional on a third of the surface of the display.
Oh, so you forgot about that.
You can put your thumb on one third of the surface of the screen and have it recognize your fingers.
Does it work okay?
In multiple fingers.
I mean, it's a little bit slower than a traditional fingerprint sensor.
Because it's optical.
Or things like Apple's Face ID unlock, but it still works.
And it's embedded in the display, and it's definitely going to get better.
But it's, if you look at Michael's video from CES or Alex's video from CES when we did our Synaptics Vivo collab, the sensor itself is the surface area that is that allows you to authenticate your finger, right? So what this did was it just took that tiny little sensor and basically expanded it to a third of the screen.
Is that what they did?
Oh, yeah. So if they wanted to, they could theoretically make the entire screen.
It's just about cost.
Sure. So this is the kind of thing where, because it's a concept phone, they could say, hey, we can make it this big. Realistically, it's probably going to be more like a quarter of the display or something like that. But they're showing that it can be rather, you know, you can put it anywhere underneath the display.
Actually, one area where this could be really interesting, and, you know, small watches are just a crapshoot right now.
Yeah.
But with any kind of authentication.
Oh, yeah.
Thumbprint right on that.
Thumbprint right on the watch face, sure.
Would be super interesting.
Yeah.
Those are the sensors. They also put the ambient light sensor on the top of the phone, because it doesn't matter. It just needs to read ambient light. Mm. And the front-facing camera pops out of the top of the phone like a periscope.
It's my favorite.
It's thing. Amazing.
Yeah.
So mechanically whirs up when you switch to the selfie camera, and then whirs back down when you switch. It doesn't pop up like a flash on a camera.
It's motor-driven. Yeah.
It's motorized up and down.
This is the worst appointment.
That's so excessive.
If you're a guy at a trade show who misses an appointment, you wouldn't want to miss this one.
No, you really wouldn't.
Man.
Some kind of loser. And the crazy thing is, so the rest of the phone is just normal. It's of a normal thickness and weight. It has a 6-inch display with, you know, rounded corners, of course. It has speakers, headphone jack, USB-C, buttons on the side, all normal stuff. Vivo could announce this phone, and I would not be surprised. It's not something where, oh, that's kind of weird. It's got this giant appendage sticking off the side because it has to, you know, make more room for it. Or the thing is 15 millimeters thick because it has all this crazy stuff in it.
Right.
It has dual cameras on the back with a flash. It has all this normal stuff. I'm sure the components inside are wildly expensive, especially when you talk about, you know, the cameras having a little actuator to run up and down.
Yeah, and the sensor being, the sensor size being,
of course,
huge under the display.
But they're just doing this, and they had a fully functional prototype with full software on it. Everything worked. And that's just amazing to me that, you know...
I agree.
I think a lot of companies have this technology. Samsung probably chief among them in terms of foldable OLED and all that kind of stuff. They just don't show it off like this. And so I applaud Vivo for doing it, and it gets us talking about Vivo when... Wouldn't have any other reason.
I literally did not know about Vivo's existence until all of the fingerprint rumors before CES. I was like, who is Vivo? I kept saying,
yeah.
What's that display company? Vizio. I kept saying, like, hey, does anybody know where the Vizio booth is?
No fingerprint sensors under those displays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
missed
so
opportunity.
All of us, we're traveling home tomorrow or soon.
Yeah.
Lots of time spent. Looking at your phones, trying to figure out what to do. So our next sponsor, they may help you with that. This is GameStash. GameStash is a service that you can subscribe to for $5 a month, and you get access to unlimited Android games. Well, not every game on the Play Store, but about 300 great games that are curated for you. From kids games to the most adult games out there. Hello, Elite Shooter. You get all of these great titles and some remakes of old NES, SNES games that are coming back. And I've tried it. Everybody here has tried it. And it's a really great service. Recently, the service just announced that it's going to be adding Square Enix, a lot of the old Lara Croft games, including Lara Croft Guardian of Light, which is coming out on the 9th of March.
Remember when that was a demanding title in terms of graphics, and it was...
What, Lara Croft?
Like the three-dimensional aspect of it and everything like that? You're like, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, whatever. It's one of 400 games on my phone. Yeah, no big deal.
I saw this comparison of the original Tomb Raider...
You don't even have to blow in a cartridge.
...versus today's Tomb Raider. Amazing. Anyway, my biggest thing, though, with GameStash is that starting on March 23rd, one of the most challenging mobile games out there, its unassuming name is OK Golf, but this will make you an addict. It's coming out on March 23rd, and if you sign up right now, you can get 2 weeks for free, and after that, it's $5 a month. So you're going to want to stick around after your free trial has ended, because OK Golf is one of the best games you will play on your Android phone. Tons of other games coming in the next couple of months. really exciting time to be a Game Stash member. If you're interested, head to gamestash.com/acpod. You can sign up right now for free. I'm so impressed that I can actually do this read because I'm a couple beers in. But that's gamestash.com/acpod. Yes?
How long is this free trial?
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
No, I'm wrong. It's actually a month right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Whoa. Yes, Derek. Thank you so much for helping me remember.
My flight is way shorter than a month.
You'll get back to Seattle by the end of March easily.
No
thank you for
kidding.
Reminding me before I read the freaking ad. So that is gamestash.com/acpod. And as always, we thank GameStash for sponsoring the AC podcast.
You know, that's right. How do you have the restraint to only be a couple beers deep?
Because I didn't want to misread the AC GameStash podcast read.
Stash.
And clearly I didn't.
Hey. You can nail that hammer name, no problem.
No problem.
the Stanley Max. Fat Max Extreme Red Claw.
Oh,
limited
man.
Lifetime warranty.
No, it's. I already have a couple in my cart. It's fine. I'm going to order them tomorrow. So
you got two hands.
So let's end the podcast on a high note. Let's talk about the ASUS ZenFone 5. Yeah, and we're done. Let's talk about the Cat S61. No, so let's spend a few minutes here. ASUS announced.
The iPhone 10. Running Android.
I don't even have the energy for this. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So
let's start at the notch.
Right.
Yeah. So they made a phone with a notch that is not functional at all. There's no reason for the notch to
be. It's about 50% wider than just the components that are placed in the notch require.
The devil's advocate is still smaller than the iPhone notch.
The iPhone notch has a lot more in it.
Sure does.
And also the screen size of the iPhone 10 is smaller.
But there's no reason why this couldn't have been an essential-style notch, either.
I mean, there's a lot about this design that apes the iPhone beyond just the notch. Let's be clear about that.
Yes.
It's about the
bezel proportions, right?
Yeah, bezel proportions, shape, size, the camera placement, all that stuff.
Camera orientation.
Yeah.
So ASUS, well-known for copying a lot of other companies.
Which I did not know, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you, but I had no idea, because I don't cover ASUS phones very much, and then... You were looking up the specs on the site.
And if you go to asus.com...
Oh, just do it.
It's remarkable. They've taken the Apple website and reproduced it, but just basically find and replaced every single word, Apple,
font
and replaced it with ASUS.
I mean, it's the Apple website.
It is, yeah.
It's so weird to read terms like Snapdragon and Android Oreo on an Apple.com looking template. Anyway,
so this phone, it's not surprising. ASUS has been teasing this for a while. But what's weird is that the ZenFone 5 is not a new name, Alex. This is
We'll remember the 2014 ZenFone 5, which was released at the time alongside the ZenFone 4 and ZenFone 6. The numbers in those instances being references to the size relative to the.
But
now we're going back to 5, okay?
Just to hammer it home.
And you remember this phone, which was relevant and still in the public consciousness 4 years later, okay?
Yes. This was the thing that really, of all the really weird things about this launch, the hashtag, the slogan was back to 5.
Hey,
what?
Come on. Who among us hasn't come home at the end of a long day and cracked open an Estrella and said, hey man, back to 5, what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, back to Cinco.
Yeah.
See, they missed an opportunity here. We should have been consulted on this launch.
What would your consult have been?
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Back away from the building. Go away. But
eat the cancellation fee. It's okay. Don't do it.
So the ZenFone 5 is coming out in two varieties, sort of. It's the ZenFone 5 and the ZenFone 5.
Well, yeah, this is the light that no one cares about. The
light is a mid-range.
The light is basically looks a bit like an LG G6, whatever.
It's unobjectionable. But the 5Z is the Snapdragon 845 version of the 5.
which actually was weirdly sort of de-emphasized both in our briefing and I think at the event as well.
Yes.
You think they would focus on that because it, you know, they'd be one of the few phones with an 845.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're actually, you know, you present it to tech media, so it's a little bit weird to see.
We like processors.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, processors are my jam.
Hashtag, we like socks.
Snapdragon 700,
No.
So, I mean, what is this phone really like? Is it just a legitimate
question?
Why is this phone? Yeah. Why is this?
How do you
thing?
Phone? The reason why this exists is because nobody gave a damn about Asus phones, and now for 2.5 or 4 days they care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people that want to be posers will buy this thing because they don't want to spend $1,000 equivalent on an iPhone X.
There are many Android phones with notches. That is a fact.
And there will be many more.
And there will be many more in the next few months.
In the last 3 years, there are many, many, many phones that look like the iPhone 6 and iPhone 7. That was like the default phone that came out of China look was the iPhone 6. For like two solid years. And nobody gave... You know, like, nobody really pointed to it in the same way that people are pointing to the notch.
Well, how could you... Well,
but it was the whole damn phone.
Because it was a commonly agreed upon form factor for smartphones. It wasn't like the iPhone...
The notch is a new thing. It was a thing that was not there before. The metal thing was more like an evolution of trends that was started years...
But also...
People keep making this argument that, like, the Essential phone predated the iPhone X, so there's it wasn't Apple copy. And, like, listen...
The difference is I don't want to use an Essential phone.
Well, and a more pertinent difference is that the Essential's notch... I mean, we even called it, like, weird names, like a widow's peak.
Dimple,
it's like
yeah.
A, yeah, like, the shape is nothing in common, whereas this is a straight-up just rip of that shape and scale relative to the overall look of the phone. And so it's just the most noticeable. My problem is
this
overall copy job.
And when I edited Daniel's write up on the Zenfone 5, and I could just feel the hate flowing through the screen.
And you needed the fire extinguisher to make sure that everything was.
And when I was reading it, the biggest problem is that Asus didn't have a reason. At all.
No.
There was no story to it at all. There was no... I mean, just looking at the notch and seeing that it's twice as wide as it, quote-unquote, needs to be to fit the thing and the things that are in it, and the fact that everything else... Look, the Essential phone, that notch could be the exact same dimensions as the iPhone X's. The rest of the phone looks absolutely nothing like the iPhone X.
That's not true. The rear camera makeup is identical.
On the Essential phone?
No,
oh, sorry.
I'm looking at
the Essential phone. The Essential phone is whole cloth, completely different from the iPhone X.
Yes.
You could talk about if it wanted to be cool with the notch, yeah, whatever, predated it. Go fight about it in the comments. The Zenfone 5 looks like this so that it looks like an iPhone X.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it to be like that.
You know what bothers me is they didn't even make a good iPhone X copy. the bezel at the bottom is thicker than on the side.
It's cheaper as well.
It's well built, is what you can say about it.
Sure.
I mean, it has the...
Asus makes quality hardware.
True.
Yes.
True.
But they're shameless about it.
Yeah. So, like, if you can get past all that, or if even somehow this is... an inducement to you to buy this thing because you actually do want a phone that looks like the iPhone X. I get it. I think the notch look is distinctive.
Whoa.
Listen, I mean, all the people in the streets are just going nuts for the Zenfone 5 V, which I called it in my title erroneously. Are you going to go investigate that? I'll keep talking.
Do not open the window.
Yeah. at any rate, if you do find that sort of thing appealing, then yes, this thing has some very impressive specs, including RAM that goes up to 8 gigs apparently when it gets made.
That's a lot of RAM
for the Z version.
Yeah,
for
sure. The Zenfone 2 had 6 gigs of RAM available,
and also Asus has corrected some of its errors of the past. Zen UI is still there, but it's lighter. There's a lot less crapware, which I think you pointed out.
Yeah, there's no duplicative apps anymore.
Man,
which is great. But what there is in the software is, to a certain extent, design cues that are very much taken from iOS, no surprise there, they're not the only manufacturer guilty of that. But you also have, they're also sort of leading into the other bad trend of 2018 phones, in a sense of just dubious features that suddenly are considered AI because reasons.
And
you have some things that actually do use machine learning, like the way they're sort of tracking battery usage and charging intelligently there based on that. Not sure how useful that is, maybe over a course of years. Maybe, and God bless you if you use Zenfone 5 for 2 years, but there you go. Maybe battery will age a little bit more gracefully. But you also have features I would characterize it as you have real AI, which is using machine learning to adapt things in the way that Huawei does. A lot of their AI is actual AI. Some of the stuff on Zenfone is like the battery thing that I mentioned. And then you have bullshit AI, for a better term.
Yeah.
It is just, basically, might as well be a bunch of nested if statements in the code. If this thing happens, it's a Tasker script. If this thing happens that is predetermined, then this other thing happens, like adjusting the white balance of the screen depending on the ambient. There's nothing intelligent about that.
Savage nerd
but
burn talking about
to me, this is the
statements.
This is the equivalent of AT&T launching 4G as...
Yeah,
some brand new technology.
It's fake AI.
Every single feature that you mentioned is common on other phones with other names, and the term AI is nowhere near those features because they're categorically not artificial intelligence. That is the buzzword of the year, not just the buzzword of the
year. This is why we have the V30S ThinQ.
Yeah, but it, okay. So,
in
their defense,
that does use neural networks.
In their defense, LG is training its neural network using what was it, 100 million photos?
A data set from another company.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean that is the way that you do it. They're fine. I mean, it's not groundbreaking.
That's how you train AI these days.
Yes.
If you're going to do that sort of AI, you give it a data set and you tell it to figure out what's in it.
Mm.
But I think what all those things have in common is other companies are pioneering this this area, and so we want to make people think that we're pioneering in this area. So AI,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So nobody's buying this phone.
Can I give you one more reason to buy it, though?
Yeah, please.
Wide angle secondary camera, very rare feature. We all prefer it. I think. Well, I don't know if we
Moto
all prefer
X4,
it. A lot of us
yeah.
prefer it. Moto X4's secondary camera is not good. I like that phone. It would be my...
$400 phone.
Right. This stands a strong chance of being better.
True.
And it is a wide-angle secondary. I just want it out there because we always say, I'd like that on more phones. Here's another phone with the wide angle.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Or you could get the LG V30S Plus ThinQ.
You're welcome.
Mm. Apocryphal intelligence.
Just
going to
keep doing it.
So,
wonderful intelligence.
That's nice.
The Zenfone 5
didn't have a Thesaur, so.
Is coming out in May, and we don't know the price yet. It'll probably be around $399. The Zenfone.
Do we know how much the
5Z is going to be? $499. That was the only pricing actually announced on the record. So we'll have to evaluate it when we get closer. We're almost at the end of the show. I wanted to end on a couple of more interesting products that Mr. Mobile has used and or talked about. The first is, as we know, Android phones are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Some companies take that base and they change them and adapt them for specific markets. Caterpillar, same company that has made Android phones for a few years. New phone coming out, or is it out already?
It is coming out very shortly. I don't think it's hit the market yet. I may be wrong on that, but I believe it was announced here.
Okay, so it's
shortly before we got here.
S61,
yeah.
And not the S61 poop emoji. That's just the That's just the notes in our...
That's job. Just
thank you for that clarification. Yeah.
That's the logo tag.
Right. So why is this phone interesting? Other than being really rugged and hard to destroy.
Right. So that's kind of the thing with Cat. First of all, and it's not built by Cat. They're
busy making tractors.
Right. The tractor making company. they have licensed their brand to a company called Bullitt out of, I believe, the UK, who actually builds these phones.
Still has a phone maker? I thought Virtue was the last one.
Wiley Max. Wiley Fox?
No, Wiley Fox is gone too.
All right. Owned by Russians and built in China, so...
Anyway,
kind of like Virtue.
So Bullitt builds these phones, has done so for... Anyone want to guess how long Cat phones have been around? Caterpillar-branded phones?
5 years.
9 years.
8 years.
Oh.
But I was over, so I get zero.
Yeah.
Cats have 9 lives. We'll see how it goes.
Jeez.
get out.
So...
Continue.
I'm getting shadow banned for the next podcast.
I understand that it's really hard to get excited about a phone that's just rugged, so I was a little hesitant, but I wanted to do a weird phones video, and it turns out I'm just going to do a video on this phone because I ended up liking it a lot. Yes, it's rugged. It's IP68. It's mil standard 810G and stuff. An interesting fun fact, they got the IP68 certification, then did the durability testing and recertified after a bunch of drops. So it is not only IP rated, but it's IP rated even after you beat the crap out of it. Yeah, and there's a bunch of details I won't get into for, you know, just like keeping sawdust out of places in your phone that other phones don't do and all this stuff.
It's a problem.
It is, yeah. So anyway, you get past all that. It's not just a durable phone. It has a thermal camera built into it. Okay, that's not really new. The previous generation did. This thermal camera is FLIR. It has an increased temperature range. It's cool. Fine. This phone also has an air quality sensor built into it. And once or twice a minute, it pulls surrounding air quality and gives you a notification, if you want, based on a certain threshold. So if you are, say, a carpenter doing some varnishing jobs on the floor and you're hanging around these nasty fumes for too long and the concentration gets too high, you get a notification. That's kind of fun. It was also fun to trigger it with this like highlighter they had there, which secreted these nasty fumes. And
just did they say how that physically works?
Yeah, there are so, like ports
like
on the side of the phone.
Like that.
I don't actually. Yeah.
Wow.
No, there's like.
So you would think a sensor would get clogged up eventually if it's an air quality sensor, but I don't, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's just these little ports on the side of the phone. It kind of looks like a speaker gone wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, and it just sniffs.
sniffs, okay.
Brand
Cat 61, the sniffing phone.
Brand new to this one you may be familiar with this from Project Tango days, everybody. A distance finder, a dedicated sensor for distance finding, but it uses an optical laser. Mm. It shines a laser dot on the surface. You're trying to measure how far away you are from, and then the camera interprets that dot visually and tells you the exact distance.
Exactly the same technology that laser AF uses in
phones. Yeah, except it's an optical laser, it's not an infrared laser, so you can actually see the dot, right?
It's important to see what you're measuring the distance.
Exactly right. So this
when
is
you're word working when you're woodworking and you've inhaled all those fumes and you can't speak like me.
Yes.
Laser sight.
Man. Every time I'm word looking, I need a laser. So anyway, I've got all this stuff built in. And then I'm like, okay, but the software is crap, right? Not really. Android ships with Android 8. They guarantee an upgrade to Android P. And they were actually apparently pretty good at keeping up with their security updates, though the demo unit I saw had December still on it. So who knows?
Impressive.
Yeah.
Normal people don't just go buy this one off.
Normal people don't want to go.
This is like a bulk sale kind of situation.
Well, that's what I said. But no, they're talking about like, you know, plumbers, carpenters, handymen, electricians, guys and gals who can like
actually
buy this thing
them.
And then expense them as a business expense. Because what do you know? It is useful to point a thermal camera at a wall to see where the damn pipes are, to see where the window leaks and all that stuff. $999. How about that?
Woo!
Yeah. Anyway, the second thing I saw...
No carrier subsidy there either.
Exactly. I was actually asked about carrier deals because by the time I got done with this, I was like, I actually kind of like this thing. And not just because I'm a tricorder nerd, as you guys know. Carrier deals and... I didn't get the hard no I was expecting.
Okay.
I didn't get any actionable data, but it wasn't just like, yeah, it'll be unlocked and, you know.
But Verizon is, and AT&T have always sold some range of really durable Kyocera phone.
Indeed, and
it has a bunch of crazy stuff built
in. AT&T in particular. And I feel like that requires a little less work. They don't have to, like, ask Bullet to build a CDMA stack into this thing or whatever. So anyway, I think we've spent probably longer on the Cat F61S. And then what's the other one? Bader? I don't have show notes.
Oh, the Plané Gemini.
Hello.
Touch my keys.
I am not going to spend very long on this because I already did a video on this at what, CES? Yes?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have one in your hands.
I do at this very moment, and I've been using it as my show.
How would you actually pronounce this properly?
Planet Gemini, or Gemini, depending on where you live in the world, apparently.
Interesting. Does it run Nougat?
It does. It runs 7.1.1, so you know it's good. I'm joking. There is a lot of customization that
I'm joking. It's not
joking. It's not bad. Yeah. No. So what this is if it is closed, it looks like an eyeglass case. You pop it open on its longitudinal axis, and what you have is a giant 6-something-inch screen running the aforementioned version of Android, hinge mated to a full QWERTY keyboard that is not like a BlackBerry keyboard. It's not too big to hold
in your hands and thumb type, but maybe too small to put on a table and hunt and peck at.
Yeah. I really appreciate your consistent shade. No, it looks like somebody minimized a laptop keyboard and not a MacBook keyboard, like not a Chiclet key or butterfly thing. It's like, what do you call these old style keys, Derek?
Garbage.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why did I even come on this show?
The thing is,
yeah,
those on-screen keys are there all the time, even though it's something that you only ever use in a specific orientation, and you have physical keys as well.
What, the on-screen keys are there all the time? So from Android, you're talking about the home.
Because we're talking about a landscape-oriented device.
Right.
Yeah, it seems kind of weird to have them there.
Yeah, indeed. And, like, you make a good point, because this is not like a phone that you can close, and then you can use it to make voice calls. You can actually close and take calls, but you cannot, there's no external screen. You cannot.
It doesn't fold back on itself to use as a full-touch portrait device.
Exactly. So this is basically from an alternate universe where we still all use clamshell phones for voice or whatever, and we carry around a separate PDA.
You use maybe a Nokia 8110 on the side.
Indeed.
You've got this looking thing.
But what its intended purpose is, and the company's quite self-aware, it's not living in this delusional cloud. It's actually, it bears a striking resemblance to the Scion, which was a UK PDA from the late 90s. With a big old keyboard, and famous for its rather accurate keyboard and excellent organizer functions. At the time, it was. I read up on this. The reviews were quite good.
You could be totally bullshitting me, and I have no idea.
I just remember trying one out in stores and it just being kind of crap, but I was an idiot child at the time.
Well, it had a strong following. And the idea was not to make just a big phablet or make a giant phone replacement. The idea was to essentially make a miniaturized laptop. And one of the only reasons this resonated with me, besides sheer nostalgia and love of weird stuff, is because we all travel a lot on airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of us can travel business class like old AM over there.
AM, who's that?
Perhaps, don't know. No, I often end up in the situation where somebody reclines his seat in front of me and I cannot fit my MacBook 15 as a result, and I don't want to work on a phone. This is, in fact, an in-between form factor. There's doubtless a lot wrong with it. It is not going to sell millions, but I am... Oh, and it can run like 4 different friggin' OSs. I literally saw a version running Ubuntu today. I saw a version running Linux, Debian, I don't know what distro, and Sailfish 3. I saw another one.
Isn't that Sailfish X?
Sailfish X is the open... Yes, it's the open source. The version you can load on bootloader, unlocked Android devices.
Which version of Sailfish matters?
None.
That's what I thought.
But you do...
Man, what? I gotta start me up a podcast.
What? So have me on and just roast me. And
it's already on the schedule.
What is this? I don't know anything about this company. What is their game here? Are they, like, is it to make the, is it to make these? Is it to make something? Wait for the technology to approach the point where they could do a detachable, or a, you know,
no, it, it's it, the
try something out.
Everything that I have read and seen and talked to them about, it indicates to me that their sole function, and this was an Indiegogo project that actually got way the hell overfunded, and now it's shipping. Their sole idea was like, hey, remember when we had organizers that like did a really good job at organizing and were big enough to type on accurately, and they seem to be they're so functioning.
Most of the people who read tech publications are like, no.
Well, yeah, but then that's what I was going to say. Their target market is definitely like 3 decades older than probably like any of us. And I asked them about that, and they were very frank. They're like, yeah, this is going to skew toward an older demo.
Okay,
but as I say, it's one of the most overfunded or beyond target Indiegogo campaigns I've seen in tech. They made so much more money than their goal was.
So I poked a lot of fun at that thing, but I think I want one.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I was talking to the Nokia designers yesterday, and I was telling them that my most beloved Nokia phone is the E71.
Which was the full QWERTY keyboard
slider. So it's a massive camera. It was the predecessor to the NA.
Talk about an amazing design.
And it had a full QWERTY slider keyboard, and the screen would go up to about 60 degrees or so.
Oh.
And it was perfect. It ran Symbian, so it clearly wasn't perfect.
It slid over the top and popped up.
But the design was impeccable. Considering how much hardware was packed into that beauty, I want to see that again.
So this reminds you of that?
I did, and it's slightly bigger, and obviously it's kind of like, remember that Moto mod that we saw at CES?
Yes,
the one where you can't, like, you have to kind of peck at it.
That thing was terrible, though.
It was terrible, but this is a better version of that. But the keys are actually usable.
Except that was a phone.
But wouldn't you rather have this in the kind of form factor that you're talking about, with an E71 or a Desire Z or an HTC Arrive? I don't remember that one.
The Windows phone.
But why? Well, of course. Why wouldn't you rather... No, you can use it close.
Derek is holding the open Planet Gemini up to his face.
Yes, he's also talking on a laptop.
It is not under
remote. And now photos are commencing. Wouldn't you rather want them to do something like this with a slide out?
No.
Over the top?
No, because then you have to have rails along the side.
Because now you're still talking about hunt and peck.
Yeah, but what would
how would
a slider solve that?
I'm saying,
so it could be used while it could be closed.
So it could be used by anyone.
But I get the point you're making, and I think, practically speaking, yeah, if you wanted to,
you
make
don't
a,
type
if,
on
if you wanted to make a smartphone that also doubled as a big old PDA, then
this
is
not a smart.
This is specifically designed. Like they are saying, like don't replace your phone with this. You can, but that's not why we built it.
So there is a SIM card. They just don't.
There is a SIM card slot, and you can. There's no camera by default. You can add one for $50.
So you know what people do instead?
Carry a laptop.
They buy an iPad
with a keyboard.
With a keyboard.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's small enough. That's small enough to type on a tray table with.
But that's significantly larger than this.
Yeah.
But like, you can put this in your pocket.
But I don't want that in my pocket.
Yes, it will fit in your pocket.
It's so good. I love it.
I don't know about you. Yeah. I don't have any free pockets. We don't all have.
But this
best
is way
pockets.
Too big for even the baggiest of jean pockets.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we got to go back to the 90s.
This is a jacket pocket,
indeed.
No, we're going back to the 90s and Genco jeans.
Yeah. And you fit an iPad in those things.
Indeed.
So yes, it can kind of do the. These things, and the fact that it exists, I think the hardware is actually really cool.
Yeah.
And it seems built really well. And the fact that it has this ingenious hinge where it flips open and kind of semi-supports itself so it doesn't topple over.
It is a fascinating.
They've done lots of cool things in the miniaturization of the keys. That's neat. What people will do is, if they get beyond carrying a phone, that second device, we're always looking for this middle device, it's just going to be an iPad.
Right now, for a lot of people, it's just a phone. No.
Well, right. The phone's a given. I'm just assuming you always have the phone.
So here's the thing. Like, I understand all of that, and I also have no illusions that this will sell in any volume. But
we're going to go to the bar later, and you're going to be jamming out some VO scripts on that thing.
Man, this
and nobody's going to pay attention.
This is Barcelona. Yeah, I ain't taking this thing anywhere near the public. I lost my pants on the way over here. Hey! No, what the hell was I going to say?
The bean. I mean they were stolen.
Hey! But folks! what I was going to say is, I mean, we all had much the same conversation about the Key One last year, right?
Yeah.
We know that BlackBerry, they've sold less than 1 million phones this year or whatever
that. Oh, my goodness.
But the Key One also has sold way better than BlackBerry expected it to. And frankly, I think way better than anyone else expected it to.
True.
So, like, there is a market for weird stuff like this. And I think it just comes down to finding, for companies, how to make a product good enough to serve those little niches. And
so,
they survive.
Summing it up, we've at this show alone run the gamut from really inexpensive $85 Android phones running Android Oreo Go Edition with the Nokia One all the way up to the $1,000 Cat 61. There's the Galaxy S9 for everybody who wants just the next big thing, you know, to use Samsung's own words. And we have the Gemini PDA, which, how much is that anyway?
I think it's I'll get back to you right before your outro. Sorry,
so,
I gotta look it up.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. What's interesting to me is that 10 years after Android's debut, it's still the most versatile OS, and there's a reason we spent 2 hours and 15 minutes talking about it.
Oh my goodness.
This is a long one.
So we're gonna end this here. Thank you so much for joining all of us. This is great. I'm gonna go around quickly. Alex, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Alex Stobie and all of the things, and AndroidCentral.com for when I write stuff, and more often now at YouTube.com/AndroidCentral. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Smash that like.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Martinick, where can people find you?
All right, fam, I'm on Twitter, at Andrew Martinick, and I apologize, Major League Soccer kicks off next weekend. I am trying to come up with a hashtag system for you to block that portion of my Twitter account. Not quite there yet.
Okay, well, in lieu of that, just unfollow him.
Yeah.
You need an AI that somehow like filters your Android-related tweets to a different account.
Oh, there you go.
What's that new social network? Vino?
Oh,
Vero.
Yeah.
I believe it's pronounced Vero. Uh-huh. You have to have a Russian.
We're in Barcelona. I think I prefer Vino.
I believe it's pronounced Muerto.
Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher, where can people find you if they want to learn more about you and your content?
If people want to consume content about weird, strange technology and also occasionally mainstream stuff, they can find me at the Mr. Mobile. Everywhere. In fact, I've abandoned Snapchat now, so it is the THEMRMOBILE everywhere. The planet Gemini is $4.99 is the starting point on that. And I am not a spokesman. I am only an enthusiast.
Derek,
what are you enthusiastic about, Mr. Kessler?
I am enthusiastic about all sorts of technological whiz-bang gadgetry things. And you can find me on the Twitters at Derek A. Kessler. That is D-E-R-E-K A. Kessler.
Yes, that's a very distinguished middle initial.
Otherwise,
what does it stand for?
Alan. Otherwise, it's D-E-R-E-K-K, and that's just weird.
Yeah.
It's like a stutter.
Alan's a good name. It's my brother's middle name, too.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. We're best friends.
My name is Daniel Bader. You can find me on all the things at Journey Dan. You can find all of us at AndroidCentral.com and Derek and some of us at windowscentral.com. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Keep your pepinos dry.
Later.